a better way. You don't have to be.
Well, we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3575 of the Survival Podcast, and I have got a great one for you today. Right about the time I was heading off to Self Reliance Festival, I heard from this guy named Colonel Drew Miller, retired colonel from the United States Air Force. He wanted to come on and talk about the probability of collapse and the way that it's seen both by independent analysts and by analysts within your government. And I checked into this guy, and he's one of us folks, and long retired colonel, if that helps anybody out there. When I look into his work, I'm like, yeah, we need to talk about this. So with a little back and forth and discombobulation with me coming off the road, I was able to connect with Colonel Miller and get him set up for this interview today. And that's what we're going to be talking about, the probability of collapse. And you notice how whenever this subject comes up and you hear my experts in the media and my experts from the government, don't worry about it. It's not going to happen. Well, in Morpheus' voice, what if I told you that the lowest estimate in any given year is about 16% and higher than 50%, and that's per year? And that might be a little confusing if you don't really understand statistics. And well, why ain't it happened yet then? Because think of it kind of resetting every year. There's some gray areas in statistics, and I'm sure we'll talk about that today. But there's a lot of probabilities. The presentation that I reviewed from Colonel Miller, if I remember right off the top of my head, had like 49 potential triggers, and all of them were low individually. But when you combine them all, that's where you get into that somewhere between 16 and 50% of probability. We'll talk about that and a hell of a lot more today. Before we do, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Anton's Land of Biltong. Now, we have been working with Anton for about a year, and if you guys know me, I am a lover of all things meat, and biltong has a special place in my heart. I taught you guys about biltong all the way back when I started in 2008. I learned about it from a dude named Peter Hathaway Capstick in one of his books, and started making it for myself. When I met Anton and he told me what he was doing, he wanted to kind of sponsor the show and do some things with us. I'm like, you got to send me some product first, bro, because until I try it, you know, and I should have known he would know what he's doing. He's from South Africa. He really built this business right in the middle of the pandemic when everything was shut down. Super great guy, super great product. You want to check this stuff out. MSB members, you do get a discount on everything from landofbiltong.com as well. And Anton will be here in just a couple weeks at our annual workshop, TSP 24. So definitely consider meeting with him if you're coming, because as far as getting tickets, they gone. They were gone in like 4 minutes when we put them on sale. As far as my other sponsor today, it's Above Foam. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about the need for personal OPSEC and security with Colonel Miller today. But Above Foam lets you replace your big tech provider with your own private ecosystem, your own private ecosystem of apps. It stops, you know, like every app maker under the sun collecting your data, the government collecting your data, your carrier protecting your, you know, collecting your data, the manufacturer of the device collecting your data. It's an awesome, awesome system, and you can get $75 off any phone at abovephone.com. Again, if you're an MSB member, and that'll get us through our sponsors of the day. And let's go ahead and bring Colonel Miller on, or should I say Dr. Colonel Miller. Hey, sir, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jack. It's an honor to be on your program.
I'm glad to have you here. So it turned out somebody had actually recommended you to me like 2 years ago, and I probably responded with what I always do, which is tell them to fill out the form, because that's just, you know, procedure. You're a procedural guy yourself, I'm sure, and we have a business procedure here, which I don't touch the schedule. My wife is the command general. My wife controls the schedule. I run the show. So I'm glad we finally did connect, though. And when I heard from you, I'm like, I got to get this guy on the show. For people that don't know who you are, though, let's start off with kind of the background story. Like, I know you were in the military for long enough to be retired. What made you even decide that was the career path for you? Kind of go back to like you're in high school spacing out trying to figure out what to do. And obviously, if you were a colonel, you had some form of college or something that led to military service.
Sure. Well, I was in Civil Air Patrol as a kid and always wanted to go to the Air Force Academy and became a private pilot, did that. Lost my pilot qualification. You didn't have laser surgery back then. So I ended up being an intelligence officer in the Air Force, and I'm glad I did because I like following the threats, and I still do follow the threats, and we'll talk about some with you on your show today. But retired Air Force colonel from reserve, spent most of my time in business, and just been a prepper for a long time. I think, well, I'm at Fortitude Ranch. We founded that. It's the largest survival community in the U.S., and a lot of our members are military because if you serve in the military, you're aware of the threats more, and you're also aware of how people, you know, when they're in a bad shape, when they're starving to death or things have gone bad, yeah, people are going to do uncivilized things. So we have a lot of military members at Fortitude Ranch.
Very cool. And we're here to talk about probability of collapse today. What I'd like you to kind of start off with, if you could, you know, I threw out some baseline numbers. And if I remember right, it was somewhere between 16 and I think 57%.
That's exactly right.
Was what I read in your presentation. But when we look at every individual thing, and I want to start going through some of the more probable ones, I think the highest one was 2-point-something%. And I won't steal your thunder by telling people which one that one was. But can you just, from a statistical standpoint, so people understand the conversation we're about to have, talk about how you have all these low probabilities add up to a rather high probability per year. But at the same time, that doesn't mean like if you had a 50% chance in 2 years, it's definitely going to happen. Because it's kind of a reset. Could you, from a statistical analysis, kind of explain that?
Yeah, so you know, if you ask someone in 1944, what's the probability that a single bomb could blow up a huge city and kill 100,000 people, they'd say, you're nuts. It's impossible. It can't be happened. Or it's a low probability because it's never happened before. And it was until it was a 1.0 probability in August of 1945.
Yeah.
When the U.S., you know, destroyed Hiroshima and then Nagasaki. So there are a lot of threats that seem low, and they may not be low. They're actually, some of them are fairly high, could happen every year, but they're uncertain. Some of your folks may have heard of, you know, Nassim Taleb, author of The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable. For preppers, I really, in business and people, I really recommend that book because he explains how people are very bad at statistics and understanding them. But when you look at the trends we face today, our population is increasingly dependent. We've got a lot of bad people, gang members who are going to maraud in a collapse. We're an economic, interdependent, highly fragile economic system. Now, throw on top of that all the new technologies and ways that you can kill. It used to take, you know, an Attila the Hun with hundreds of thousands of followers before he could really pose a threat to you. Nowadays, a single individual can do it. One person can take the H5N1 virus and using CRISPR technology or even low-tech methods that are government-developed with gain-of-function research and published in open-source literature on how to do it, you can make that previously avian or bird flu mammal-to-mammal contagious. And that has happened over the past 10 years. H5N1 now is spreading in mammal populations all around the world, and you can modify it or it's going to naturally mutate to the point where the 60% lethal virus is released and ends up killing most of our species. Probably not the virus directly, but the collapse that follows. And I should define collapse. I've noticed some comments, people asking about that. We define collapse as meaning, number one, the economy is not functioning. And number two, there's widespread loss of law and order. Things break down. When there's a pandemic, policemen aren't going to show up for work, a lot of them. I'm not blaming them. They want to stay alive. They want to protect their families. And so if you don't have a survival community, you don't have advanced warning, which our Collapse Survivor app tries to provide, and you're in a big city or a suburb, good luck, as your audience well knows. You're not going to survive a pandemic. Even if you avoid the virus, you're going to starve to death. Are you going to be killed by marauders, people out looking for food so they don't starve to death?
All absolutely true. I just want to add kind of one thing on the statistic thing so that as we go through this and you start throwing numbers out, everybody's on the same page. The way I explain statistics to people when you talk about it going year to year would be like if I hand you a six-sided die and you throw it and you're supposed to hit the number three, your odds of getting a three are 1 in 6.
Right.
Right. Very simple. The next time you throw that die, your odds are again 1 in 6. The first throw has no impact on the second throw. you're still looking at a six-sided die, and any number could come up. So throwing it six times in a row does not guarantee you a three, but it's pretty likely to happen with that small of a number. So I just want people to get that in their head. If they take, let's say, your bottom estimate at like 16%, and they say, well, then that means that over 6 years it has to happen because that is a little less than 20%. No, it doesn't mean that, but it does mean there's a high likelihood that it could.
Correct.
And I think to get that in your head that way and not just think like it's absolutely going to happen because the number's X, but to understand that probability is important. And that leads me into my kind of my first, you know, meat off the bone question for you. How do you estimate the probability of something that's never happened before? If I look back at history, I can say that, you know, if I look at something like the fourth turning, it's not a perfect template, but there is a consistency to it. And these things have happened before because we're going very rudimentary, like war is a catastrophe, right? Or depression is a catastrophe. But we have had nuclear weapons used, but we've never had intercontinental ballistic missiles deliver nuclear warheads. Right. We have had cyber attacks. We've never had a cyber attack shut a grid down. So how do we come up with a probability of something with our base being totally guessing off of other factors, not how many times has this happened before?
Right. So we track, as you mentioned, 50 different, we call them trigger events that could lead to a collapse. And just because a trigger event occurs doesn't mean you'll get a collapse. So the probability of collapse model is a two-stage model. First, we estimate, is the disaster trigger event going to occur? And then secondly, is it going to escalate? Is it going to become something that spreads over a wide area, leads to the loss of law and order, the breakdown that leads to a collapse? So it's a two-stage part. But the 50 threats that we track, some of them we do have statistical data for. For example, we've had, you know, experts estimate at least six extinction events in our planet's history. Super volcanoes and asteroids caused those. So we have a little bit of statistical data on that, but again, you got the same problem. You look at how often does Yellowstone explode. I'm going to have the numbers wrong, but just roughly here, you know, it's like every 300,000 years, Yellowstone goes up. So the annual probability is very low. However, Yellowstone's kind of behind schedule. It's been more than 300. Some people think that. So there are some we have statistics for most we don't. So what we do in the model, and we just updated our model last month and did a press release on the probability of collapse model update, and there's videos on it I can point you to when we did the press conference. What we do is we survey experts, so intelligence officers, scientists, biologists, people who track this. There aren't a lot of them, but there are people like Professor Nick Bostrom at Oxford University. He has a Future of Humanity Institute. They do track things like this. And experts then can give an estimate of what is the probability that this particular trigger event will occur. And then secondly, what's the probability that you think this would escalate out of control? So let me do Civil War as a good example of that. Ray Dalio, he's the founder and CEO of Bridgewater, one of the most successful hedge funds in history. He has made his fortune by correctly predicting future events. Pretty smart guy. So Ray Dalio has estimated that the probability that the U.S. is going to end up in civil war after this next election at greater than 50%. That we're going to have some kind of civil war violence. But then you ask the question, what kind of civil war violence? And there's not a lot of information on that. With the Collapse Survivor app, we've been running simulations. We've done two civil war simulations, and they're training exercises to help you prepare. But we also use them, the people who help write the scenarios. Again, they're largely intelligence officers and defense analysts. We use it to kind of figure out what is likely to happen. And then we also poll in these surveys. So if you take the Collapse Survivor app, if you take the Collapse Survivor app and you're playing the weekly simulations, most of the time you're getting message traffic items. This is what we use in the military. I used to write simulation exercises as an intelligence officer. We train on them all the time. So you'll play simulations like, well, there's an election civil war one right there. So we've run two of them already. And as you're playing this, you get message traffic, and then you get questions like, hey, there's a marauder group outside your house with 10 people. What do you want to do? Do you want to go attack them? Do you want to have everyone hunker down, get ready for an attack? Do you want to call your neighbors? There's decisions you got to make, and that's the training simulation. But we also poll people on the question, how do you think a civil war would develop? So using all these sources, we tried to answer the question, well, if the Civil War happens, if there's violence post-election, if, for example, Harris wins and Texas secedes from the Union, which is, I think, fairly likely, a good chance that could happen, what would happen? Do you think there'd be fighting between the states? If Trump wins, that was a simulation we did, and this is what happened in one of our simulations. Trump won the election, and California started talking about secession, but before that could go anywhere, rural conservative counties in California that are already in revolt over the Second Amendment said, screw you, Sacramento and L.A. and San Francisco. We're not following your
state. We're not coming with you
anymore. And so California started breaking up. And there are a lot of states like that. I'm sitting in one right now. Colorado, most geographically part of the state, is conservative, Republican, libertarian. But who has most of the votes? Denver, Boulder.
Denver, yeah.
And so the Democratic Party now rules Colorado, and they've just done, for example, recently, the state told the rural counties, you will all follow our building codes, even though we're a big city base, you're a rural county. And so a lot of, you know, county sheriffs in Colorado already say you can take your gun control laws, your limits on how big my magazine can be in my AR-15, and shove it in an appropriate place. We're not going to enforce it in our county. So that's the kind of civil war we think is going to result. And so back to the model. So the model says, what's the likelihood there's going to be civil war violence? It's larger than 50%, our experts think. What's the likelihood that that's going to develop into a collapse level violence? That's very low. I think we estimated that at, let me cheat and look at my numbers here real fast. We estimated the likelihood of a civil war collapse at 2% was our low estimate. So it's, there's going to be violence, but it's probably not going to escalate to a collapse.
But that was like your highest or second highest out of all the triggers.
Yeah, right? I can go through that real fast. That's slide 14 if we ever bring up slides. But if you go to slide 14. There we go.
Guys, if you are on the audio only, if you want to see this, jump in to the video at around 17 minutes and you'll be able to see what he's talking about.
Okay, so we get 50 events. Some of them are multiple things. Like you can take down the electric grid a lot of ways. Cyber attack, physical attack, an EMP event, a solar flare. Last May, I don't know, Jack, you're probably aware of this, but last May there was a big solar flare and the Collapse Survivor app issued an alert. And we warned people, hey, there's a solar flare. One of the experts we found estimated that the odds of the grid being damaged was bad. So this was issued by the app on May 9. And here, I'll just read it to you. The National Space Weather Prediction Center has issued a severe geomagnetic storm warning. There's a risk of a solar flare that could damage some or much of the electric grid. One expert has estimated a 10% risk of damage to the grid, but this is highly uncertain. So that's what the app does, is it issues this alert. Did the government issue an alert to people saying, hey, there's a chance the grid could go down in May? They didn't. The government just, you can't rely on them for alerts. I'll get into that later with H5N1, but back to that. Our grid is very, very fragile. A solar flare could take it down. North Korea, with their crappy little nuclear force, highly inaccurate, can destroy the U.S. electric grid right now. They've got the capability. They don't need high yield. They don't need accuracy. They don't need a lot of weapons. One or two high in the atmosphere of the United States and the grid is gone. And if you think I'm making any of this up, there's a documentary called Grid Down, Power Up. It's won a lot of awards, very professional. It explains how easy it is to destroy the U.S. electric grid. And it gives this figure from a congressionally funded EMP commission study. When our grid goes down from an EMP attack or a severe solar flare, 90% of Americans will probably die. You have no economic production. Municipal water systems don't work without electricity. Can't pump gasoline. It's, you know, it's the 1800s. And at that point, you know, Jack, most people don't have your food and survival skills. Most people will die. Their estimate was 90%. So back to that slide. I'm sorry, But on slide 14, if you add it all up, we estimate as the 23 experts who updated the probability of collapse model, we estimated a 3%, and that's low, 3% risk of a grid down event happening every year. Our electric grid is the U.S. Achilles heel, and everyone knows that. North Korea knows it. Russia, China knows it. If we had a simulation we ran on the app, and again, if you want to know why the U.S. military is so good, yes, it's technology, but more important, we train. Saddam Hussein had great technology and his weapons too, but, you know, his troops didn't train, didn't exercise like we do. We did a simulation of China getting into a game of nuclear chicken with the United States over Taiwan, and they threatened the president, you withdraw the Navy, all assets from Taiwan, or else we're going to start launching nuclear weapons at you. And the president didn't back down fast enough. China sent just, I think it was six or eight in this simulation, sent six or eight nuclear warheads. We intercepted some of them, but a couple detonated and the U.S. grid was destroyed. And at that point, you know, it's a situation where you could lose 90% of the U.S. population. So grid was number one. The second thing was pandemics, either a natural pandemic, H5N1, will continue to evolve and mutate until it's not just spreading in dairy cows, not just spreading in birds, not just spreading in all kinds of other species. It's human to human transmissible. And when that happens, if we're lucky, the lethality may be lower than the 60% it's historically been, but it's going to be enough that it'll cause a horrible collapse. Or you could bioengineer it. So the 2.6% is an annual likelihood that we're going to have a horrible pandemic from either bioengineered or natural causes. The Civil War came in third, a 2% low chance of a domestic civil war. And that's really focused, I think, on the near future here. And then 1% was societal breakdown over other causes and violence escalates. For example, an economic collapse. If there's a big economic disaster, you know, Americans aren't like we were in the 1930s. We're not the Waltons anymore. So we don't have, you know, our own food production. We're not just going to stay on our farms. If there's a bad economic disaster, that could lead to people getting violent and loss of order, loss of law and order results. And then the fifth one was the risk of a nuclear attack. That's pretty low at 0.7%. The higher estimate, I think, was around 4 or 5% of the annual chance. But back to your point, when you have 50 ways that you could have something escalate to a collapse disaster in any year, the likelihood is high. It's not low. The likelihood we're going to experience a collapse is pretty high.
When we talk about civil war, for instance, I think it's really important to understand when you say, like, well, what form is that? I think the form that's in most people's minds is out of date, archaic, and was never a civil war. And this is not a defense of the South or anything. It's a tactical military analysis of what's being called a civil war. I've seen what civil wars look like. And they look like that dude across the street trying to kill this dude on the other side of the street. Yeah. There's not usually a clear delineation like, this side is on this side, and then we're going to fight like a conventional war, almost like two countries going to war, but they used to be one that cracked in half. Usually civil wars are so bloody because they're everywhere all at once. And, you know, what you mentioned about California and, like, a lot, there's a lot of California that's actually very conservative,
yep,
at least on our political compass, that don't want anything to do with Sacramento and L.A. and San Francisco. But if you look at a state like Texas, we ain't elected a statewide elected Democrat since Ann Richards, right? And 80% of the people listening to me don't know who Ann Richards is. She was a governor before W, right? That's, and I'm talking every statewide election. We haven't elected a railroad commissioner, a senator, a governor, a lieutenant governor, an attorney. Nobody has won a statewide election as a Democrat in Texas since 1993 or 4. That's a long time.
Yeah.
There is still an absolute F-ton of Democrats and uber-liberal crazy Democrats in Dallas, Houston, Austin, and San Antonio. And it is only the size of this state and the sheer number of people that live in rural environments that keep us from becoming a California or a New York. New York, same thing, switched around like California. There's a very small portion geographically of New York State. So I see that if you had this breakup, let's say Texas says, you know what, we got seaports, we got oil, we got ag, we got the eighth largest economy in the world, we've got something like the 12th largest military in the world just with our guard, piss off, we're done. It doesn't mean everybody that's here is going to be okay with that.
Right. Yeah, I think the civil war violence will be within states, and the split is not between states. It's urban-rural to a large degree. Mm-hmm. You just demonstrated that with what you talked about in Texas. You know, in Nebraska, where I used to live, strongly conservative Republican state, except for parts of Omaha. And, you know, there's a possibility Harris will pick up an electoral college vote in Nebraska this year.
I'd say it's almost guaranteed.
Do it differently. So, you know, the fighting, I think, if there is civil war violence, and again, I think it's unlikely. I think you're going to see violence after the election. Indeed, Fortitude Ranch just put out a collapse threat alert just yesterday on the app to our members. And then for non-members, we said, you probably should not be going downtown or any places where protests go. Like, I wouldn't go to downtown Portland on election day or the day after, or Baltimore. So stay out of places where protests occur on election day and the day after. That was our alert warning. And then we told our Fortitude Ranch members, we are going to be open on election day. We don't think there's going to be uncontrolled violence, certainly not in most areas. But if it would make you feel more comfortable, come to Fortitude Ranch. And if the collapse does occur, you're already there. And if not, it'll be a social. Because Fortitude Ranch is not just a survival community. It's also a recreational vacation place to go. So we just put out an alert to our members. We use the Collapse Survivor app for that, saying, you know, and anyone gets the alerts, not just Fortitude Ranch members. If you have the app subscribed to, you'll get all the threat alerts we put out. And we said, you know, there's going to be some kind of violence. We can't predict it. It's going to develop. It could go crazy and go out of control. It could be fairly quiet. I can't predict that. No one can. But if you want to be safe, you're welcome to come to Fortitude Ranch to ride out the election in guaranteed safety.
Well, I'll put it this way. In 2016, with about a year of the media convincing everybody that on one side that Trump was literally Hitler, we had lots of violence on election night. Mm-hmm. We've had another 8 years of the media pounding that idea home to people who literally believe everything that they're told. They honestly think that if he gets elected this time, he's going to send SEAL Team 6 to kill his political enemies, and the Supreme Court said it's okay. That is the most preposterous thing I've ever heard come out of, like, official mouths, yet it has, and it has been believed. I've been telling my wife, what scares me isn't what's being said, it's the number of people that believe it.
Yeah, and there could be, no matter who wins and loses, there's going to be some election violence. It's going to happen on both sides. And again, that's another thing on the app. We asked that question. First Civil War simulation we ran, we asked the question, does Donald Trump running increase the likelihood of civil war and collapse? And most people did say they'd make violence is more likely, but more people said they see a civil war coming regardless of whether Trump's in the race, because the country really is divided, and I would even say irreconcilably divided. Libertarians and some Republicans, you know, want to follow the constitutional limits. The Ninth and the Tenth Amendment in particular are ones that effectively, per the Supreme Court, they don't exist. They're in the written Constitution, but neither the Ninth or the Tenth Amendment is enforced by the Supreme Court. It may as well not exist. And that's wrong. And a lot of libertarians and conservatives, you know, it's not just the Second Amendment that's violated. It's a lot more than that. Most of what government does is federal government does. It's unconstitutional because the Tenth Amendment is crystal clear. If it is not written in the Constitution that you can do a post office, raise an army, conduct foreign policy, you may not.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely clear. The articles of the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, it's just crystal clear exactly what the Tenth Amendment means. But in a 1937 case, look it up if you want, the Helvering case, the Supreme Court, under a lot of pressure from FDR to pack the court, where have you heard that from? That's been coming out again recently. They basically surrendered to FDR. They kept declaring all his unconstitutional programs unconstitutional, which they were. But in the 1937 Helvering case, and the case was on Social Security, which is unconstitutional. There's nothing in there authorizing the federal government to run welfare programs. But the Supreme Court basically backed down and basically said, you know what? They didn't say this, but in effect, this is what they did. They said, we're just going to ignore the 10th Amendment. As far as we're concerned, federal government, you can do anything you want. There are no limits to federal power. And it's been that way since 1937 since. And the Republicans long ago gave up trying to get that enforced. So both parties just say, forget the 10th Amendment. We can do whatever we want. We'll we'll pass whatever we want to buy the votes we need to get reelected.
Well,
by the way, before I forget, this is an issue the Americans are united on.
Yeah.
We are absolutely united on term limits. Polling shows overwhelming support. Let's stop having professional career politicians whose priority is voting them back into the office. That's why we've got an electric grid that we've known about for decades that's
nobody
a fragile
closed,
because the public utilities are huge lobbyists, huge spenders. They buy reelection votes for elected officials. They also do it to state officials in Texas. I can give you an example of that if you want. And so Congress sacrifices our security and safety, lets us have an electric grid that we know anyone, a terrorist group, North Korea could destroy and kill 90% of us. They allow it because utility lobbyists don't want to deal with hardening the grid.
No, they
and
don't.
So they make big donations and they keep electing. But anyway, polls show absolutely clear support for term limits. Who's stopping it? It's not just Congress. It's the Supreme Court. They say, oh, you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. That part of the Constitution they'll enforce because they're appointed by congressmen, and that's really who they're beholden to. So.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for going off on that.
No, it's fine. I mean, what
it's
I was
a bad
say,
issue.
There's really two parts of the 10th Amendment, and one has been tested extensively and failed, and that is the government doing things that are not enumerated powers, right? But then there's the other side, which is when states actually assert their rights under the 10th Amendment, and the states have been largely milquetoast with that.
Yeah.
But I can see some of these scenarios resulting in Texas going, well, maybe we don't need to go all the way to secession, at least not immediately, but we're going to put in these four or five things. And if that all gets shot down, basically, like, you've taken, you know, those who make peaceful revolution impossible, make violent revolution inevitable, is mm-hmm. kind of where you go there. This is our remedy under the system we agreed to. And now you've told us the remedy doesn't apply. So that only leaves us with gloves off, some shit's going down.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there's a real potential of kind of backing states into that corner. And it, you know, it could come from the opposite side of things. If California tries to do some things, for instance, or New York tries to do some things in the opposite direction. And but the thing is, most of those things wouldn't actually conflict with the federal government. Right? Like, that's why on the term limits thing, what amazes me is what's his name? Rand Paul puts it out every year with a grandfather clause that doesn't apply to any of y'all. And still nobody will touch it.
Now, the political parties don't want to do it, and the political parties control their representatives and senators in Congress.
So let's move on. You are big on AI, too. And when I first read that, I went, oh, no. And then I read how. And I went, oh, yes,
yep.
Because there are people that think that ChatGPT is going to turn into Skynet tomorrow and send robots back to kill John Connor and kill us all. That is not how you perceive the threat. The way
Correct.
You perceive the threat is exactly how I perceive the threat. There is a new tool, and anybody can use it, so everybody will use it.
Yeah, I'm looking around trying to find the slide I could cover, because I've got a really good slide built up. Basically, the problem isn't bad computers and robots. The problem is bad people using AI to create more effective means to kill people. And the slide's not coming to my attention real fast. And you can see a lot of evidence of this. Where is that slide?
Come on, man. You ain't Randall Carlson. You can't be like, pull up deck 3 and give me slide 87.
There we go. It's slide 5. It's at the very beginning. I'm looking at the end. I covered it right up front. It's slide 5.
Okay.
Explains why.
Right.
The problem is not bad computers in the future. The problem right now is artificial intelligence. For example, again, we ran a simulation on this in the Collapse Survivor app. People used artificial intelligence to develop new means to enrich uranium to make it easy to develop a nuclear weapon. People have the assumption now that everyone's going to make a nuclear weapon like we did back in the 1940s. Well, guess what? There's laser enrichment now. And there's all kinds of other ways. How are we going to figure it out? Someone's going to use, and I'm sure this is already going on in North Korea and maybe even Al-Qaeda and other places, they're going to use artificial intelligence to figure out a better way to enrich uranium. Or maybe they don't even enrich uranium. Maybe they come up with an entirely new way. I mentioned Nick Bostrom, the professor at Oxford University. He's also written a lot about this, saying, artificial intelligence is going to be used to develop better ways to enrich uranium, better ways to poison municipal water systems, you name it. We're using it to develop better ways to do weapons and to fight wars. All the governments are doing that. But it's also going to be misused by terrorists to develop better ways to kill people. And the AI people know this. You know, this is why you see all the AI big tech leaders. They're investing massively in survival. You know, it's not just the traditional preppers on your show, Jack. You know, it's you know, Facebook, Zuckerberg has a huge complex in Hawaii. Peter Thiel, I admire Peter Thiel a lot. He's got a place in New Zealand he's going to fly off to. And they're all over the place in California and elsewhere, and especially the tech folks who are aware of the AI threat as it really is. It's bad people. They know that AI is going to be uncontrolled at this point, and we're not going to be able to stop it, and it's going to develop new means to kill people. I actually think we've entered what I call the age of collapse. That is definitely got a slide on that.
Okay.
If you advance forward. Yeah, I have a pretty neat video put out on this where I talk about the threats that we face. This slide goes over the probability of collapse model, but
what slide do you need me to get to for you?
I'm trying to find that. Well, let me just talk on while I'm trying to find the slide number for you. There are just so many ways nowadays with new technologies that make it easy for an individual to call it. Slide 41, that it's unavoidable. You're not going to be able to roll back AI. You can't get rid of the CRISPR bioengineering machines. You're not going to be able to get it back. And as a result, and you're certainly not going to get international control of bioengineering technology, as a result, there's no going back. We are entering what I call the age of collapse. I actually did a study using this title when I was at the Institute for Defense Analyses, which is the biggest Department of Defense think tank. And that was published, you know, years ago. But with the advances in biotechnology, artificial intelligence, so many other fields, an individual has unprecedented power to develop either a nuclear weapon or a deadly virus and release it. Again, you don't need to be Attila the Hun with hundreds of thousands of people. You don't need to be running a country. You don't even have to have a big terrorist group. A dedicated individual nowadays can develop a new virus, may have the ability with AI to develop some other new means to kill we haven't even thought of yet. And that's why you've got to be, everyone needs to be a prepper. Everyone needs the Collapse Survivor app to start getting better education, to start getting the tools and the warnings of when collapses come. Because it's going to get to the point where we have collapses, you know, every other year we have a collapse event. There's just no way to undo. You can't put the technology, the genie, back in the bottle. It's out there. And until you do things like stop having big cities, stop international air travel, and dramatically change, which no one is willing to do today, we're going to have to suffer through a lot of collapses, because that's our future.
Yeah, I also think like that brings up some things when you go into AI that go back to our previous discussion about things like Korea or China could use an EMP attack. And some people would say, well, if it's as easy as you say, then why ain't they done it? Well, because even though our military would have a lot of problems because they rely a lot on our grid, too, they also do have some redundant systems, and it would not be without reprisal. So there's just like there's a mutually assured destruction with a full-on nuclear exchange. If you don't think we can tear up their grid, too, then you're not paying attention. And maybe they've hardened it better. But what I'm saying is they would not go away scot-free with this. If I'm living in a cave, but I have access to computer technology like AI, I don't care if the whole world goes to hell. I might kind of want it to. We also have some other, you know, everybody always thinks of the Middle Eastern and what connection and Islam and all. And I ain't saying that's not a problem. I'm just saying there's other people that have other mental problems. Like there are some environmental wackos that think that would be great if 90% of the people on the planet were dead.
Huh. They can make a moral argument for that.
Right?
I read an article, a female biologist, and she was referring to human overpopulation, and she actually used the term, I'm not making this up, she referred to people as, quote, mammalian weeds, unquote, in her article. And she can make a moral argument, a sound moral argument, that for biologists to take CRISPR technology or the H5N1 virus and some low-tech means and develop into a human-human transmissible virus that kills a billion people from the virus, and then the collapse kills another several billion, her argument is going to be, I've just solved the global warming problem. No economic production for years, no economic activity or pollution. Now humans are cut way down in numbers, so they're not destroying the planet. And as a result of that, killing, 5 billion people, I have now saved the planet, saved thousands of other species, and here's the kicker, Jack, I've also saved the lives of hundreds or trillions of future people who can now be born because we haven't destroyed the planet. They can make a sound moral argument. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying it's likely to happen. And it's happened in our show, and it's happened on our app. We've run H5N1 pandemic simulations. And when they happen, that's gonna be the worst event in our history, species. And back to your point about, yes, if China or North Korea does a HEMP, high-altitude EMP nuclear attack on the U.S., of course we're going to retaliate, and they may suffer more than us. For China, China could take a lot of nuclear hits and arguably be better off after that than they were before because they don't need as big a population as God. But I think what is more likely for China, Russia, Iran, Al-Qaeda, or this female biologist I mentioned, I think they're likely to just release the virus. Mm. You can release the virus over here. We'll never be able to figure out. And even if we could figure out through our intelligence community that this came from North Korea, we wouldn't be able to prove it, probably. Wouldn't be able to convince the rest of the world that we are right. And at that point, so what if we've proved North Korea released a virus that goes, now we're going to destroy them? How does that help us?
I mean, if you look at it this way, so the COVID thing all started like a couple blocks down the road from a coronavirus research facility in China, and people still don't believe there's a connection. I don't know how you'd get a more red hot poker demonstration of the two things fitting together than that. And even the people that said it didn't happen now said it probably did, and most people still don't believe that. So the reason I think that was an accidental link is because if I was China and I wanted to do it intentionally, it would have started somewhere else. Correct. It's not like it would have been hard to make it start somewhere else. It would have been actually really easy to make it start somewhere else. And that would even, if you want to go total conspiracy theory, maybe somebody else did make it start somewhere else and pick that place for a reason. But my fear now with pandemic, because pandemic's always been my most probable earth-shifting event. And when COVID started, I went, this ain't it.
Yep.
But damn if our government didn't damn near turn it into it with their ridiculous level of response. Now, the blowback on this, let's say we get a truly virulent H5N1 or something, and it really is knocking out not even 50%, let's say a 10% death rate, and a 30% hospitalization rate. The world goes to a stop. And at this point, the vast majority of people will go, I don't believe it. Boy who cried wolf syndrome. We're primed for that, too, right now.
Yeah, well, back to your point on Wuhan. The intelligence community is not the CIA. They're just one of many, many agencies. And there are several members of the intelligence community who do believe that COVID-19 was from an accidental lab release from Wuhan. And the U.S., your government did give China money for gain-of-function research. And that's what blows my mind more than anything.
Yeah.
Our government gave money to China to develop more lethal viruses. If I would have made that up, if I did that in a collapse survival simulation, I'm going to do a scenario where the U.S. government gives money to China to develop more lethal viruses. People would say, Drew, you're an idiot. That's
the algorithm in the app would just go delete. No, it's not true. And it's so much worse because they were actually prohibited from it and created a carve out loophole to get it done.
It's incredible. So we may never resolve how COVID-19 started, but I can tell you this, the gain of function research our government has funded has been successful in developing mammal-to-mammal transmissible H5N1 virus, and then we published how we did it. It was not CRISPR technology. It was a low-tech way. So, as I said, any person who seriously wants to develop a deadly virus can do it. And I'm not blaming our government for this, but at this point, there's no way we can stop it. It's going to happen. And we do face a future where not just nation states and big terrorist groups, but individuals, Unabomber type folks, can release if they want. If I could bring up an important slide on this gain of function research and the virus that we're talking about, that will be slide, there we go, 39. So the Center for Disease Control, I tell people, is lying to Americans today. They keep saying H5N1 is low risk. That is the biggest, most irresponsible, worst lie I think I've ever heard from our government. H5N1 is going to happen. It is going to be human-to-human transmissible. You can find biologists who will tell you inevitable. It will happen either through natural mutations or through human intervention, but H5N1 will become a human pandemic. Hopefully it's not 60% lethal like it has been in the past, but even if it's 20%, 10% lethal, no one is going to go to work when there's that high lethal virus that's highly transmissible. No one's going to go to work, and that includes policemen. They're going to try to save themselves and their family. The economy will not function. Law and order will break down. That's a collapse. And this pandemic could last for a year. It could last for several years. The 1918 Spanish flu was probably the worst named pandemic in history. First of all, it didn't start in Spain. It probably started in Kansas in the U.S. And secondly, it wasn't 1918. It lasted for over a year. It wasn't just there and gone. And you've seen that with COVID. The viruses will keep mutating. They'll be with you for a long time. Most people will die when H5N1 happens. It's inevitable, and calling it low risk is irresponsible. Also on this slide, you see the current CDC says that. The former CDC director has said this in recent months. Number one, he said, stop doing gain of function research. It's too dangerous. Stop doing it. The CDC is still funding it today. And the other thing he said is, we are going to have an H5N1 pandemic. We need to get ready for it. And he also said he probably thinks it's going to be bioengineered. I do too. If Russia wants to knock us out from supporting Ukraine, all they have to do is release a human-to-human transmissible H5N1 virus. We're dealing with the disaster. We're not doing any foreign aid to Ukraine at that point. If China wants to destroy the United States or North Korea or anyone else, release it over here and then quickly close your borders, try to limit its spread into your country. That's the easy way to destroy the United States without getting nuclear retaliation. So I think I don't think you can avoid it. You know, back to that slide I had earlier from this institute, slide 9. That's basically what I wrote years ago in this Institute for Defense Analysis study. We've got bioengineering today. Anyone can develop a highly transmissible, high lethality virus and release it. We're in the age of bioengineered viral pandemics and collapse. You can still get this study online. It was unclassified. I also had a version published in a professional journal on it. And we can't stop this. There's no way to reel it back. So what you need to be doing is getting yourself ready for collapses are going to happen. That's why we've got the Collapse Survivor app that we put out this year, because we realize most people aren't going to be able to join Fortitude Ranch. We've got 7 locations, but, you know, we can house 1,000 or a couple thousand people. We can't house hundreds of millions of people. And we want to get more people prepared. You are, Jack, your audience is, you know, they say now that a third of Americans are prepping. Well, they're starting to do some preparations. You know, they can handle the grid being down for a week. They can't handle a collapse level disaster. NARC and Fortitude Ranch handle that. That's what we're putting out with the Collapse Survivor app: education and warning, information, and then most importantly, the alert, so you can get a head start. Don't listen to lies from the CDC and the government saying it's okay, nothing to worry about, low risk. It's inevitable that we're going to have these disasters. You won't get honest warnings from the government. You need the collapse threat alerts that the Collapse Survivor app puts out to save your life and to give you some advance notice.
So a lot of this stuff is coming from analysts that either formerly or even currently work for the government. If everything that we're talking about is potential and possible, and even some of it probable sooner or later, because I personally think I don't care if it's H5N1 or H1N1 or H2N3. I don't give a shit what it is. I don't care if it's flu. Sooner or later, we will encounter a pandemic that has a high lethality rate and is highly contagious because we have. We always have in the past. Like, it's a thing that will happen. But why in our government that civil war, nuclear threat, et cetera, why aren't they doing more about it? Because it doesn't seem to me like they're doing jack diddly crap. They can't handle a hurricane in North Carolina, let alone something like we're talking about.
Slide 38.
Okay.
Slide 38 gives you some specific reasons for that. And again, we just briefed this. If you want to watch the full briefing, the Collapse Survivor app has a channel on YouTube, Collapse Survivor, and there's a briefing on this probability of collapse model update. So number one is that our government is not focused on preparing. They're focused on reelection. The grid is the best example I can give you. And again, don't take my word for any of this. Watch the professional documentary, Grid Down, Power Up. Jack, you ought to have him on the show, the guy who produces, David Tice. I can give you his email. It's
That'd
a fantastic documentary, and it explains much better than I can in about 15, 20 minutes, how easy it is to destroy our grid, and then why our career politicians haven't done a damn thing to harden it. They should have done this decades ago. We've known about this for decades. But they want to get reelected, so they take donations from utility lobbyists. They don't harden the grid. Secondly is the government, to a large degree, likes you being vulnerable and dependent on government. If we're well prepared, then we don't need government as much, you know. They want people to think, don't worry, if you just trust the government and reelect us, we'll keep you safe. And then that's the message they want. They don't want to be honest about what a threat that H5N1 is. And then preparedness requires weapons. You know, if you look at the Democratic Party campaign platform, it doesn't say, hey, you better get weapons to defend yourself from marauders and this collapse is coming.
No.
It says you're not allowed to have ARs and the weapons you need. And I do need military capable weapons if I'm going to survive in a collapse. A marauder group, you know, I love my double barrel shotgun I grew up with in Nebraska hunting pheasant and quail. Love my double barrel 12-gauge shotgun. However, if there's 15 marauders coming at me, I need an AR. I don't need my double barrel, you know, shotgun. And then government officials don't have to worry about a collapse. I tell people, if you really want the best possible preparedness, don't join Fortitude Ranch. Get elected to Congress. They'll take care of you at Mount Weather with fantastic facilities, great food, security. Everything is there. They even have, believe it or not, there are media rooms at Mount Weather. So the congressmen, while they're, you know, in between eating and watching movies, can go into the media room and get a link back to their district so they can keep doing their campaign reelection and check in with the people, you know, keep their popularity up. So for all these reasons, government just, and there's no lobby for the preparedness industry. You know, there's no one, there's no big weapons production. There's no votes you can buy by hardening the grid. If you harden the grid, you're going to, it's doable. You are going to raise electric costs. It's going to cost money to do this. So who wants to be the politician who votes for making your electric bill go up to harden the grid? They're interested in reelection. They're not interested in protecting people.
Wouldn't decentralization of power be a huge solution there? In other words, the power I generate for my home on my property is far less vulnerable than the power generated for me by TXU.
Correct. Microgrids. And again, we've done grid down scenarios on the app. We also do lesson learned podcasts after they're done. We had an expert on microgrids on our grid down scenario. That's on the Collapse Survivor app. There's a video. Microgrids are the way to go. We should get away from a national grid. If you want to do some sharing of electricity, that's fine. But every locality and absolutely every military base should have their own means to produce electricity. I know some of your audience may not like Bill Gates. Put that aside. He's now developing small nuclear power production systems. That's one way to go, and we need to be doing that. We need to be getting back to microgrids that are a lot more reliable and a lot harder than for you to take down the whole electric grid. I mean, town goes down, if your next town over has power, they can help you out.
They can help you. And I would say even if you had, you know, we talk about splitting the concepts of self-reliance and self-sufficiency here a lot. And self-reliance is measured in time. Self-reliance is, I can go X number of days, months, years without support, but it will run out. It's the prepper component to supply side of the situation. Self-sufficiency is indefinite, or for all intents and purposes, indefinite. Maybe my solar panels have a life expectancy of 30 years, but for this type of scenario, that gives me a very long duration, but maybe I'm only producing 25% of my power. But if I lose the grid, at least I still have 25% of the energy that I'm accustomed to. I have something. I might do a zero sum. If we had these microgrids, even if per community, small town, whatever, they were only producing 25% of the energy that that town used and relying on a centralized grid for the balance, if that fails, at least they have something. And I think we need to start thinking more that way. You've got the battery and you've got the generator. The battery is that self-sufficiency measure or self-reliance measured in time, and the generator is that self-sufficiency measured in percentage. Like, most people will never be 100% self-sufficient because we like luxury, but we could be 100% self-sufficient for survival. And I think that's like my first level I try to get people to. Can you get to a point where like your life will go on even if it's miserable? It won't just stop. And if we can get there, then you can build beyond that as far as you have the capacity and determination to do.
Yeah, sure. And Jack, I read on your website that you're a prepper who does believe in taking advantage of modern technologies, just don't be reliant on them. And that is exactly the philosophy of Fortitude Ranch. So, you know, I'm sitting here next to our ham HF radios. We've got solar systems. We've got propane generators. But at the same time, our major source of energy is wood stoves. We believe in wood stoves. You know, our three principles at Fort Ranch are: number one, respect Murphy's Law. If anything can break, it's going to break. If it didn't go wrong, it'll go wrong. Number two is KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And again, that's why we prefer wood stoves to solar systems. And then our third one is adapt. But, you know, the biggest barrier to prepping out there is the U.S. government, with regulations, with making the costs, the building codes so expensive that good luck trying to afford a bug out facility, the way government keeps pushing building codes into rural areas, requiring you do tests for green energy on your log cabin that your log cabin, I'm sorry, isn't going to pass. And the other thing they're doing is they're outlawing wood stoves.
Yeah,
they're outlawing wood stoves,
and they want to get rid of
the Western United States. Yeah, it's like, are you trying to kill me?
You know, wood stoves are far more self-sufficient than gas, but gas can give you a big freaking battery, which is why I think they don't want it.
Yeah,
the only gas I use here is like my grills and stuff and my stove. I don't have gas heat. I don't need heat very often here, honestly. But I have a 120-gallon pig that gets filled 100 gallons because you have to leave some space in it, basically, is how what the propane people told me. I have it filled, you know, probably more than they want to, because if something goes wrong, I want it full.
Yeah.
But honestly, I could fill it once a year. I could fill it once a year, and I would never run out. And, I cook. I'm a cook. That's my thing all the time. I'm either outside on gas, inside on gas. Like, that's my deal. And if you take that away, now I'm dependent on the grid to be able to cook and heat my home. This is insane. I mean, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania. We heated our homes with coal, right? We had coal boilers. We heated our homes. And then we took the ash and we used it on the street so you had traction. And the last time I was home was 20 years ago. And almost no one's using coal or oil anymore. They're all on electric. And those are much colder winters. It's very expensive to get through a winter up there.
Yeah.
And that's when nothing's wrong. That's when nothing's wrong. And if I have gas heat and the electrical grid goes down just from random garden variety winter shit like happened here 3 years ago where half the state was without power, I still have heat. If I have electric heat, I have no heat. And I've been doing this 16 years trying to create a culture of preparedness. And I wish I'd been more successful because I haven't. And the vast majority of people I talk to, it seemed like during COVID, they woke up for like 5 minutes and they went right back to sleep. They have no plan at all for anything. The most basic mundane things like an ice storm, no idea what to do if it happens. And I'm telling you, I literally walked into a QT, which is like a big, I don't know if they have where you are, a big convenience store. Mm-hmm. And in Texas, convenience stores, people stop to eat. Like, you know, there's all kinds of food and stuff. and they have these rollers for like the burritos and the hot dogs and shit. And I watch people warming their hands over the rollers in a QT store because they had gotten power back before these people that lived, you know, a couple blocks down the road had. So they were hanging out in a QT to keep warm.
Yeah.
I do not think that should be your disaster preparedness plan is going to the QT or 7-Eleven or whatever.
No, and everyone needs to get prepared. And as I said, you're not going to be able to stop most of these new technologies. There are always going to be bad people, and we're going to be living in an age of collapse if you stay alive. And if you don't get prepared and you're just relying on the government to take care of you, no way they can, or give you honest warnings, they don't, then you won't make it.
So let's talk about, what do you think the most likely of all these things we've talked about and all the other probabilities out there are of a near-term total collapse?
Well, very near-term, November to January is a really bad period for the United States. I don't think we're likely to have a civil war that leads to a collapse. I think there'll be violence, but I think it'll be more localized and hopefully we'll get under control. But this is the absolute perfect time for Russia to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine. I think that's a good chance that Russia will use nuclear weapons in Ukraine. And probably about the same time they do, China will, I don't think necessarily invade Taiwan, but issue their ultimatum to the United States and Taiwan that U.S. has to go, Taiwan has to agree to come back. Otherwise, they will use nuclear weapons against Taiwan at the same time that Ukraine is using nuclear weapons over in Europe. At the same time, you need to expect North Korea to threaten South Korea. Again, they've got a nuclear advantage. They're going to take advantage of it. And then Iran, you know, we all know, almost regardless, Iran's going to do anything. But they're an alliance. I mean, our government doesn't talk about this often, but it's the most obvious military alliance in the world is China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. You could throw Syria in, too, if you want. And so they're going to move between November and January when the U.S. is guaranteed to be divided after the election, and we got a lame duck president. So we've told Fortitude Ranch staff, do not take vacation between November and January. We're going to be open on election day. And I think our enemies are going to take advantage of this, regardless of whether or not we get to a civil war level in the U.S. So I think short term, the probability of a collapse is way up, considerably up.
Yeah, I do think that will all that happen? I don't even think you're saying that. It could. But it's a high probability that some piece of it happens in that period. And I'll say, especially if Trump wins. And the reason is, like, you're if you're one of those actors, your opportunity won't get better in the future. Mm-hmm. You will have the greatest opportunity. It will come to one of those moments of, we either do this now or maybe we never do it. And, you know, hopefully common sense would weigh out that this probably isn't going to be good for anybody. But there's a lot of people out there that are willing to take a lot of risk because they don't think the risk applies to them. I think part of our problem is there is a plan for what our government officials do if this shit goes down. They have nice, cozy caverns to go down and live in. Now, how well will that work out for them? I don't know, but they believe that it will. And, you know, I've lived in places where I've had a storm shelter and where I've not had a storm shelter. And when there's a tornado on the ground relatively close, I was a lot more bold when there was a shelter to go into rather than going to the lowest room in your home, which in Texas is your first floor. Right. So I think that there is some of that too, some level of bravado among government officials on all sides because they have a place to go. And again, I'm not saying it's going to work out for them, but it doesn't matter if it will. It matters if they believe it. Or when you were talking earlier about, you know, potential pandemics, if you create the illness and you have the illness from the beginning, you have the potential to create a vaccine for the illness.
Absolutely.
To release it. Now, will that work? You know, things mutate, et cetera. It doesn't matter if it doesn't work. If the person doing it believes it, it makes the probability of them doing it much higher.
Yeah, well, North Korea and Russia are already largely cut off from the rest of the world, and they can cancel what limited international flights they have in an instant. So North Korea releasing a deadly virus over here, or Russia doing that in West Europe and the U.S., or a terrorist group doing it, is a very high probability event that that could occur at any time. But I do think they're better off acting all at once. Well, I know they're better off all acting all at once. So if Russia escalates to nuclear war in Ukraine, potentially into Poland as well, since that's a country they're particularly mad at. And then China moves on Taiwan at the same time. Iran and North Korea are making trouble. Not just the U.S., but the U.S., NATO, all of our allies, we're just too overwhelmed. We're not going to be able to respond to that. And I think that's the plan. We'll find out in the next several months. But I do believe that they're going to take action. And then how's it going to impact us? Well, if you listen to U.S. nuclear doctrine, if Russia were to attack Poland with a nuclear weapon, our nuclear promise has always been, we'll give you a nuclear umbrella to protect you. We'll attack Russia with nuclear weapons if they do. And I can guarantee you, if we do a nuclear strike on Russia, Russia will do a nuclear strike on the United States of America. And they'll probably do one that takes down our electric grid. And when they do that, according not to Drew Miller, according not just to this Grid Down, Power Up documentary I'd mentioned, according to the U.S. Congress funded and commissioned EMP Commission report with the best experts on the electric grid, when that happens, 90% of Americans will die. And there's so many different ways that we could get in a collapse. Avoiding it is impossible. You have to get prepared for pandemics, attack on the U.S. electric grid, some accidental nuclear war that develops, or any of the other causes that could lead to a collapse. And then artificial intelligence just makes everything worse. I hope we live long enough, Jack, to where we do have to worry about bad computers and robots attacking us. But AI is an immediate current threat. And over time, it'll just get worse every year. That's why all the rich tech CEOs are preparing for a collapse. They think it's inevitable. I do too.
Some of them may actually want it to happen. I don't personally see Russia attacking Poland with a nuclear weapon. I think Putin's got more discipline than that. The amount of restraint that's been exercised on the Ukraine front already, the fact that Kyiv is not leveled already, tells me there's restraint there. It does mean somebody might not attack Poland and might not want everybody to think Russia did it. Right? Well, I don't think Russia blew up the Keystone pipeline either. I think that's one of the most asinine things I've ever heard. You have the pipeline. It's yours. You control it. You put stuff in one end. It comes out the other. You don't want it to come out the end, or you turn it off. You don't blow it up. So we blow the damn thing up, and then we say Putin did it because he's the bad guy.
Yeah, but Poland participated in that.
I completely agree.
That's another reason why Russia is mad at Poland. Where are the F-16s that, you know, we're transferring to Ukraine? Where do they come from? They come from Poland. I think Poland is at substantial risk. I think Russia initially will just use battlefield tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine. And then we've done scenarios again on the Collapse Survivor app about this. And it may not escalate from there, but there's a good chance that it could. I mean, if NATO continues to pour a lot of long-range conventional weapons into Ukraine, and they tend to come through Poland, yeah, I could see Russia escalate to a nuclear attack on Poland. And at that point, again, the U.S. is supposed to be involved now defending a nuclear or NATO ally, and we're supposed to use nuclear attacks on Russia, according to the doctrine we've been following for decades.
Yeah. I also think that some of these other locations you mentioned have higher potential to go fully kinetic. The Middle East and the Taiwan Straits in particular have a much higher potential to go fully kinetic, because I think there's actors that more prefer that. But if, like you said, there could be this domino type thing, you know, where if this one blows up, these other actors go, well, now's our moment. Now's our moment. I kind of think that if Trump wins, this de-escalates once he's in office, the Ukraine front, because I really think his approach to Ukraine is going to be, y'all need to negotiate or we're cutting you off. I mean, that's the feedback I get from certain sources on the inside. That there's things that can't be said prior to an election that are actually the undertow of what's going on. But that doesn't do anything for Taiwan. That doesn't do anything for the Middle East. And the Middle East looks like we're going to have issues. Like, Israel seems to like want to turn Lebanon into northern Israel. I don't think that's very palatable to other actors in the Middle East either.
Well, we should not assume that Iran does not have nuclear weapons. At the point, that is our current assessment, but there's all kinds of officials unofficially leaking out information that it is quite possible that Iran does have nuclear weapons. It's also possible that Iran has or could quickly get nuclear weapons that they didn't develop, but Russia provided or sold to them. So, and you know, now you keep seeing these reports. I don't know. I can't tested their reliability. Iran is saying we've got a secret weapon as powerful or more powerful than nuclear weapons. I think there's a good chance that Iran is planning a bio attack on Israel. Are they do have nuclear weapons, and we just don't know that. I mean, it's not hard to hide a dirty bomb
on Jerusalem tomorrow.
Yeah, that's more of an annoyance though than a real.
Well, it might not be in of itself a massive event, but the trigger that would cause. Yeah. Like, can you see CNN, MSNBC, Fox News the day that happens?
Well, people need to remember, how did World War One happen? World War One happened where some low-level Archduke
Ferdinand was popped in the head by an anarchist.
Yeah, and then, within a couple of weeks, we're at the worst world war in our history. And so, it's not rational. So that's another reason why United need to be prepared to collapse. Even if there's absolutely no rational reason for North Korea to launch a nuclear attack that takes down the U.S. electric grid, do you really want to assume he's going to stay rational? It could happen. Or maybe develops a clever means of doing without a nuclear attack directly from North Korea. I wrote a book called Rohan Nation, Reinventing America After the 2020 Collapse. Wrote it obviously quite a long time ago. But in that book, there was both a pandemic and there was an EMP attack. And the EMP attack was launched by a Scud missile, not off the coast on a boat. Scud's a short-range missile.
Yeah.
And carry nuclear. But it was launched from a commercial aircraft up in the air, flying over the USS, launched it out of the back end of the plane, up a little bit higher, complete surprise, detonated, and U.S. grid is gone. And again, when the U.S. grid is gone, it's over for us. Our military's knocked out, and we're on the path to 90% of our citizens dying, too.
Yeah. I also think there is potential for something like all of this stuff to happen. It might not even be the actor on the other side. There's been enough, books and novels and movies about it, that there are people that would love to see the United States and Russia hurling nuclear bombs at each other. We talked about why in the beginning, so we don't need to rehash it. So if a nuclear bomb goes off somewhere in America, the conventional wisdom, there's only a few places it could have come from, right? We don't figure it came from one of our allies that we gave it to, so you're left with North Korea, China, Russia, maybe Pakistan. But there are nuclear devices that could fit, something the size of a Coke machine and be set off. And I can't remember the movie. There was some movie out of the whole, Tom Clancy style of things, but it wasn't Tom Clancy, where that was done. They blew up a football stadium. I think it was in Baltimore. But the whole plan was to cause this global conflict, even though it wasn't Russia, whoever, who did it, because it's such an old movie. I think there's potential for that, and I think it's higher with biological or chemical than nuclear, because it's easier.
Well, it has been. Again, that's why artificial intelligence is such a big threat. Back to Nick Bostrom at Oxford University, he says, eventually we're going to get to the point where someone can take certain chemicals, stick them in their microwave, run it, and now they've got a material they can make nuclear weapons out of. You got to remember, there's that AI is so powerful. There's a game called Go that's been played for, thousands of years. AI came up with a strategy that in all that time, humans had never even thought of. And it was the best strategy. So AI is going to come up with new ways to kill people that we haven't even imagined yet. It's not one of the 50 trigger events that we're tracking right now. AI will come up with a new one, and someone, some country, some terrorist, some lunatic who thinks the way to salvation is for you to, kill people is going to do it. And so you've got to be prepared for those kinds of disasters coming. With technology developments, it's just going to get more and more likely every year. So it's 16 to 57% probability of a collapse annually now. It's going to get higher over time. Now, maybe once a bad collapse occurs and you've killed so many people, the internet's not functioning, maybe that'll go down for the following year. But again, we're in an age of collapse, and our government is completely irresponsibly not warning people that we are going to have an H5N1 pandemic. It is not a low risk, like the CDC continues to lie about. It's an inevitable disaster that's going to happen that we're not prepared for. And people, You know, that's why we've got Fort Henry Ranch. I don't just want the Marauders to survive a collapse and the damn politicians on Mount Weather and Raven Rock and all the FEMA facilities. I want middle-class Americans to survive, too. And that's why we need Jack. We need your show. We need everyone getting prepared. You need the Collapse Survivor app so you can get better educated and also have the advance warnings, because the government will not give you honest warnings of a collapse. Not at all. They'll tell you to trust them and reelect them. They'll take care of everything for you. Yeah, right.
We've mentioned Civil War a few times. Your models are that the probability is relatively high. The probability of it resulting in collapse is relatively low.
Yes.
Why is that?
Because it's not, I mean, the states aren't going to fight. So if Texas, you know, if Harris wins, Texas, the Texas movement is already very big. If it moves forward now.
Let me pause you right there for people that are unaware of this. It is much bigger than you think it is. And if you don't live here and you're not tied into the people behind it, you are unaware of how prepared this is. There's literally models that take the state level offices and immediately use them to replace the federal offices that they are counterparty to. That's just one example. I just want to be clear to that. What he's saying, folks, about Texas does not mean we'll do it tomorrow or you need to be property, you know, you buy property here so you can get in before it happens. I'm just telling you, if it comes to it, there is a serious, serious movement here to be ready to go and flip a switch overnight. I ain't even saying it'll work. I'm just saying it's there. Go ahead, sir.
So in our first Civil War simulation that we ran on the app, the Democratic Party won and Texas moved towards secession. But there was never, and then we polled people as well, the players in our app. And if Texas succeeds, you know, the U.S. is not going to fight Texas. That asinine Civil War movie that ran later this year, asinine on many levels, but, you know, especially California and Texas are alive. Are you crazy? We're on the other ends of the spectrum. But anyway, Texas can succeed. There's nothing in the Constitution against it. But even if the Supreme Court says it's illegal, you can't succeed, Texas can still succeed. And the U.S. is not going to fight Texas to say you can't. There's not going to be a civil war. It's not going to be fighting within states. And when Texas goes, again, I was in Nebraska as an elected official in Nebraska. Nebraska, if the Democrats win and keep going toward, you know, the socialism, the ignoring, trashing the Constitution that they do, you'll see a lot of other states join Texas. And that would not necessarily, it would not be a disaster. Yeah, the United States falls apart at that point, but it would be livable. I mean, Texas was still could even participate in the U.S. military. They could ally with U.S. foreign policy. Well, what are we going to do about Fort Hood? I think Fort Hood is the largest army base there is. It's in Texas. Well, you know, we have bases in 70 or 80 countries around the world right now. Let's add them in one more, you know, the Republic of Texas. So you could even keep Fort Hood and you could keep, you know, U.S.
San Antonio Air Base, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like that could be, or it could also be get your shit and get out and we're taking it over with our guard. Yeah. You don't know how it's, but I don't see, I agree with you. I don't think there is the political, globally wherewithal for the United States in the 2020s. To go to war with a state who says we're leaving the Union.
No, they wouldn't do it.
Right, conflict. But I do see a potential domino effect that, let's say, Texas leaves and a few other states leave. It could become very quickly the case. Right now, if Texas was not in the Union, what are the odds of any Republican winning national office as president?
It would go way down, which is why Nebraska and other states will follow Texas out.
If you take Florida and Texas, it's pretty much a zero without a major sea change, right? So at that point, you have the people left behind, right? Like, how do you form this alliance with New Hampshire, which is completely landlocked in between? Like, I see this maybe then leading to what's left behind starts attacking each other.
Well, and you also got to look at the other scenario. What if Trump wins? And if Trump wins, you know, will California succeed? They have the right to constitutional. There's a lot of debate over this. The Constitution is completely silent on secession, which tells you the Supreme Court can't make a decision of whether or not it's legal. They can try to interpret stuff, but, you know, they interpret stuff to eliminate the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment. Therefore, even if the Supreme Court gave a unanimous ruling, it's illegal for any state to succeed, I would still say that's bravo, Sierra. If a state wants to go, the state can go. So California could succeed. But if California succeeds because they hate the Trump administration, they're going to have a lot of rural counties that say, like hell we do, we're going to form, and there's a name for it, the State of Jefferson.
Correct.
I'm not making
that's
this
going
up.
On in
Google
Washington
State
Oregon.
Of Jefferson. Yeah, absolutely. And Washington, this could happen.
Oregon.
That was our second simulation. We ran a second Civil War simulation. And in that one, Trump won, and a lot of the Democratic Party-controlled states started breaking up. California, Nevada, Colorado, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts. The rural county said, screw you, we're out of here. We're gonna either form a new state, or we're just going to stay where we are, not form a new state, but we're not going to pay attention to your laws that we don't agree with anymore and never wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And people are saying it would never happen. I think this is what I took away. I read the fourth turning and then the second book I think one of the two authors died, Strauss or Howe. I think it was Strauss that wrote the second book after Howe passed away. And the biggest thing I took away from that was every major thing like this that's ever happened, not just in the United States, but like if you go back to the War of the Roses in England, if you go to all these great tribulations that societies have been through, everybody said that'll never happen 2 or 3 years before it happened.
Yeah.
It's never been the case that everybody's like, oh, it's going to happen. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, that's the black swan again. This is a New York Times bestseller. But if anyone wants, you can email me at manager@forgeranch.com. This book is so good, I wrote my own Cliff's Notes to it. So I'll send you quotes from the book you can use. But he says, Taleb says, we are by nature, kind of conditioned to ignore disaster things that haven't happened before. It hasn't happened before. We're going to assume it either won't happen or it's a very low probability. As I said, right up until the time the nuclear weapon is used in 1945, or there's a bioengineered pandemic in 2025, it's just our nature not to do it. And then again, the statistical bias. Well, there's no probability because it hasn't happened. Well, of course it hasn't happened before. We haven't had the technology to do it before. It's a new thing, so there's no historical statistical basis. But people won't pay attention to black swan events until they happen. That's the nature of it. Taleb uses the term, we are suckers for black swan events. But don't be. Get prepared. You can reason that, yeah, we face a threat from AI. Yeah, we face a threat from H5N1 and bioengineering. And so you can get prepared. You can get the Collapse Survivor app to get educated. You can join the 40 Ranch. You can watch more of your videos to learn how to grow food and raise animals and prepare yourself to survive when the economy isn't functioning and there is no policeman, no National Guard force that's going to come when there's 50 marauders coming down the road trying to get your food and supplies.
Well, that's the other thing that people don't get. It doesn't matter if the whole thing goes into collapse. It only matters if your area of control goes into collapse. And if you haven't reached out to neighbors about how to create mutual defense if that goes down, then I think you're woefully unprepared for far less than the extreme examples of what we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to have those conversations now. And if you become aware really, really quick that your neighbors are not going to be willing to participate in mutual defense, or actually might be adversarial in that situation, you might need to really think about moving. One of the ways this show really kicked off way back in the day, so to speak, is it was mid-2008 when I launched this show, and one of my first messages were, get your money out of the stock market. In fact, what I said over and over was, to be very clear, get out, get out, get out. During the plandemic is what I call it, I started saying that about what I would call flashpoint cities. I can't guarantee you where you'll be the most safe, but I can tell you where you will be the most at risk.
Yeah.
And if you don't know if you're at the most at risk, did your city burn during the BLM riots? If it did, that's not the only places, but you are in a place that is most at risk, and you need to get out now. And here's what I said at the time I was saying that. It may not seem easy right now, but it will only get harder. Has it not gotten harder? Look at interest rates. Look at the cost of real estate. Look at the dry up of inventory. And what I said is there are zones, you know, that unless we're talking, you know, global nuclear war, will be relatively safe spaces to work in. I'm not saying it's easy, but you got something, and those zones will both shrink and become harder to acquire. That's exactly where we are in only 3 years since I started saying that. But I'm still saying the same thing. If you live in a flashpoint city or the beltway suburbs around it, get out. If you live in a Karen-run HOA, I don't care where you are, get out. Because those people are not prepared for what's going to happen. And the people you think are no threat to you, when they get scared shitless, are the biggest threats to you.
Yeah. You know, New York City is the – you didn't say New York City, but New York City is the obvious last place in the world you want to be during COVID. So you would think that Fortitude Ranch has a lot of New York City members, and we don't. They don't want to think about – we've got Fortitude Ranch, New York. It's a franchise location just a little over 2 hours away in the beautiful Catskill Mountains. You'd think it would have sold out in the first week with New York City people wanting to go. But no, they don't want to think about it. If you really thought about it, good chance you wouldn't move to New York City or live there to begin with. But, you know, if you're a place like New York City, actually any big city or big suburb, you've got to be able to get out. When the grid goes down, no municipal water systems. I mean, almost any big city is going to be unsurvivable. You've got to be able to get someplace where you can get water, grow food, defend yourself, and try to get away from big marauder gangs. So we're growing now through franchising, like in Fortitude Ranch, New York, because we can't keep up with the demand, and it's just too much for us to do on our own. But there needs to be a lot more preparation. You need to have the ability to do it with your neighbors, as you said. And if you're going to do that, then you've got to learn. I mean, if you don't have a survival community like Fort Ranch, then you have to know, how do I use a nuclear radiation detector? How do I grow food? Do all the things you educate about on your program. So the Collapse Survivor app can help with that, but it's a lot of work to do that. And it does take some investment in money, not just your time.
Yeah. But I mean, there are places where it's obviously going to be worse. And like you said, New York City, I don't even mention New York City much anymore, as you said, because I feel if I have to tell you that, you probably aren't listening. But I mean, I was in New York City when we had the huge blackout. So this is, God, I can't remember what year that was, but I was back then, I was the regional sales vice president for a company called Fluke. And I was in downtown Manhattan when the lights went out, and I was absolutely amazed at how stable everything stayed, how calmly everybody just walked across bridges and walked out. But it didn't stay off for very long. And, you know, I ended up stuck there. I was in a hotel that had backup power. They didn't have any comms to run, but if you had cash, you were good. So, I mean, I literally drank a beer and watched Manhattan empty out.
Well, this is older than you.
You can see, what I'm getting to is you could see right before it came back on, it was this close to looking like it did during Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, well, New York City did have a grid out that was longer than that. It was back in the 1960s. It was the record day for arson. They had fires, attacks on police. It did go to hell in New York City then.
Yep.
But it was at night. It was a longer period of time. So if you're in New York City, you can survive, but you have to survive by getting out, and you got to get out as fast as possible. And again, that's why you need
there,
to
you can survive by leaving.
That's the only way to do it. You've got to get out of New York City. So the app will give you warning. And this is the good thing. People, I think, preppers do exaggerate this. When there is a disaster coming, it's not like, you know, the marauders are instantly everywhere and roads are blocked. It's not going to be like that. So first of all, any kind of disaster, when the government finally admits it, again, get the Collapse Survivor app so you've got extra days or hours of warning. But even if you wait for the government warning, the government says, hey, there's a pandemic coming, or the grid's going to go down in New York City. When they do that, what are they going to tell people to do? They're going to tell them, go home. There's nothing else the government can do. The government's going to tell everyone, go home. If you got kids in school, get them out of school. Go home. If you're at work, go home. So most people have no preparations. They don't watch your show, Jack. So they are going to go home. There's nothing else they can do. They don't
shelter
have a bug-out
location. Shelter in place is the standard action. Yeah. See, a giant meteor is about to land on your house. Like, your house is literally where the projection is. And they would still tell you to go home and shelter in place.
So this is the nice thing for us preppers is, and for 14 ranches, it's going to be easy to get out of New York City. There's not going to be a lot of traffic. You know, people are going home. You can get out of a big city, even like New York City. And especially if you follow the app, we'll be issuing alerts saying, hey, we think a pandemic is coming. If you're in a big city, get out now. If you're a 14 ranch member, get to your 14 ranch location right away. We'll be advising you if it's a pandemic, do not go to a grocery store. The pandemic may already be there. Some people may already be carrying the virus. You know, we'll issue warnings, get you advance warning, but the roads are not going to be overwhelmed. It's going to be more like the early days of, you know, COVID-19 when they started locking people down. Traffic was light, so you should be able to get out of a big city, get to a bug out location. But you're absolutely right. You don't want to be in a big city.
You have to really be paying attention, and you have to be acting before most people do.
That's why you need the Collapse Survivor app to give yourself some more advance warning that it's coming.
All right. So what do you think the best way to get prepared is for people then? Like, what are the things they should be doing?
You should be watching shows like this and getting yourself educated. The Collapse Survivor app can help. But, you know, there's a lot to learn. If you're going to do it on your own with your neighbors, that's going to take a lot of time and work to do it out. If you've got the money, we're priced for middle class affordability at Fortitude Ranch. But still, it does take some money to join Fortitude Ranch. But get prepared as best you can. And definitely when you're in a big city or a suburb around a big city, you need to have some other place to go. You need to find it. You need to develop it. Join a survival community. Get a group together. I hate to say it, Jack, but, you know, for years I had members telling me, you got to watch Walking Dead, Drew. It's a great show. And I said, it's about zombies. I deal with real threats. I'm not going to deal with make-believe zombie nonsense. He says, no, you got to watch it. It's Marauders. It tells you what the Marauder threat is going to be like in a collapse. So I watched the show, and I have to agree. There's a lot of Marauder stuff. But here's the bad thing, Jack. There's tens of millions of Americans have watched that show and all the follow-ons. And what we're hearing more and more is, unfortunately, the right lesson to learn from that show is, you know, join a survival community like Fortitude Ranch, get the Collapse Survivor app, become a better prepper. Unfortunately, what a lot of people I'm hearing are doing is, they're forming Marauder groups in advance. They are planning on marauding from the get-go. Unfortunately, there seem to be some people that's what they plan to do, and a lot of them have been inspired, unfortunately, from that TV show. I don't know if you've been hearing that.
To a degree, I have had people that are consultants in this space tell me they've actually met with people that are like billionaires, and some of their questions were, if we take people in, how do we control them?
Yeah,
like, well, can we put, like, how do we control them? Basically, you have these people who have a lot of money and a lot of resources setting things up now, and they know they can't just dig a hole, go down there, that they're going to need people. They're going to need some human labor after the fact. And they've had conversations with people, and they basically said, so we don't do that. We're out of here. We're not helping you at all. But they were wanting to know things like, you know, think of like old school Star Trek, 1960s Star Trek, where they had the thing around their neck. And if they didn't comply with these aliens, they could put them in intense pain. Like, how do we lock a dog collar on somebody's neck type thing that these guys were asking? These are people with money and resources. And the place that this information has come from is not, I read, you know, I'll tell you when I write something off immediately. I read somewhere or I heard somewhere, and then somebody fills that in after that on social media. I don't, whatever you said, I just act like it never happened because it probably didn't. The information that I have on things like this is not that kind of information. This is firsthand information with people that I've worked for years that have no reason, like, literally one of the conversations, the man that called me about it was, he called me because he was disturbed and needed somebody to talk to. So that's some of the shit that's being talked about. That's not so much a Marauder group. That's a place that you might think you're going to be safe. And they're talking about how to make sure that you're a good slave after all the shit goes down. So if that can happen, what can't?
So if you're going to go there, you know, if you're incredibly wealthy and you want to build your own survival compound, yes, you need a lot of people. You need a lot of guards on duty. At Fortitude Ranch, we say, you know, 50 is about the bare minimum. You need to have 6 guards on duty 24/7. You can't serve all day guard duty. And so if you need a lot of people and you're going to have hired staff, you've got to have their family has to be protected too. And I think that's why you see a lot of these high-tech folks, they're building really big facilities. It's not just for them and their family. If you're going to employ guards, professional guards, you have to include their family. Survival communities like Fortitude Ranch, you know, that's who we have. Our members have weapons. It's not just staff that have weapons. All of our members have weapons. Everyone serves guard duty, but our families are there. So, you know, it's not like, you know, they're not there to protect me. We're all protecting each other. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go the route, and it's an expensive one, if I'm going to build, there's a lot of them. I mean, there are thousands. There's a company called Hardened Structures, and they've been around for decades. They have built thousands of underground bunkers for rich people. But those people have to have a lot of guards, and if you want to have your guards protect you, not kill you and take over your facility, then you better have their family protected there too.
Well, and you better have enough resources so they don't become scarce among the people that are there, because this is what I've always tried to explain to people. When somebody says, well, this person would never do a thing, you'd be surprised what a very benign-looking, soft-seeming man will do when he's looking at his child starve.
Yeah. Jonathan Hollerman is a consultant and an expert. He's former Air Force like I am, and he's written books. He studied starvation and what people do when they're starving. And you know, cannibalism is one obvious thing that they do. But, you know, there's cases of family members, you know, killing other family members, doing some really horrible things. Starvation is a horrible way to die, a really, really bad way to die. And, you know, in China and the Great Leap Forward, what a great lie that is. You know, then they, you know, hundreds of millions starving to death. They're eating dirt because some people thought, oh, there's a special dirt you could eat. It's just people don't want to starve to death. That's why I think marauding, people think, oh, not many people would go out and kill the survivors. I said, yeah, they would. You don't want to starve to death. You don't want your kids to starve to death. People may go out preferring to just steal the food and not kill. But when the person who has the food is defending it with weapons, you're going to be killing too.
You know, and I'll tell you that I think the problem with the marauder theory is that the way it's depicted in Hollywood or in prepper fiction that I call prepper porn is probably not the way it would look, especially with a smaller group. If I was going to take a four-man team plus me and go after your stuff, I'd have everybody dead before they knew that they were in danger. And I don't really want to lay out exactly how. But you give me four trained people and the right equipment, and you give me, you know, a family compound with 20 people on it. And if I'm the aggressor and I'm patient, I'm not riding in on six motorcycles with a guy with a machine gun on his shoulder or something. It's not Road Warrior. You won't know that there's a problem until you're dead or dying.
Correct.
And that's a problem that people get in this bravado shit. Well, I got this and I got that and I got a laser sight and I got NVGs. Yeah, well, so do I. And so do the people who want you dead. Right. And I don't think people really understand that risk. And I think part of it's self, like emotional self-defense.
Yeah.
It's not something you want to look at.
No, even preppers often don't think it through. So let's say your example, you got 20 people. And at that point, good luck keeping even two guards on duty. But let's say you got two guards on duty at night at 2:30 in the morning. If anyone's ever taken a 42 Ranch tour, they've heard the story because we say it on our tour. If you've got just two guards on duty, and a group like yours is after you, even, you know, four people, let's say you just got three people in your group, they're going to watch you, they're going to observe, and they're going to find out you've got two guards, where you are, and they're going to pick a time like 2:30 in the morning, you've got night vision, and they're going to line up their shots, they got walkie-talkies, so Jack, you call your, you're a marauder in this scenario, you call your fellow marauder and you say, you got your guy, yep, I'm ready, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you shoot at the same time. Those two guards are now dead. Now, the people sleeping inside, you've shot from a distance. Someone may wake up and have heard a noise. But human nature, if you wake up and hear a noise and you listen and now it's quiet, what do? You go back to bed. So the Marauder group now waits. The guards are dead. No lights coming on. No one's stirring inside. Then they go out into the house, and now I'm back to Walking Dead. They do what you saw in Walking Dead in a series, in a scene where they go in and they go around every room, knifing people, killing everyone there. So the other 18 are now killed. That's why I said at Fortitude Ranch, we say you need 50 people or more. You know, our goal is hundreds at every one of our locations because we want to have 6+ guard posts manned all the time, defensive walls, 100+ people with weapons, and we want the Marauder groups looking at us to say, holy shit, they've got cleared lines of fire, defensive walls, there's 6 guards on every duty. Every one of those blankety blanks has a weapon. We're not going to attack them. We're going to go after the easy target, like 20 people in a place with 2 guards on duty. They'll go after the easy soft targets.
And I do think that's reality. And I think that the type of team that I'm talking about is far more dangerous than your motorcycle gang marauders.
Oh, yeah.
Most of those people don't have any idea what they're doing. There's a lot of people in our society with military training, and some of them would tend to our side, let's put it that way, and some will tend to the other side. I think that we have this illusion we've created because we make heroes out of everything. We make heroes out of teachers. We make heroes out of nurses and doctors. And we make heroes out of soldiers. And so people who've never served have this view of the average soldier as being this above the fray type individual. I know you served. I served nowhere near as long. But I'm going to tell you, I had all types of people emotionally and mentally around me. And all of them got the same training, if you know what I'm saying. And so there are some of those. And then one of the things you learn to do in the military, especially if you're more toward the combat MOSs in like the Army or the Marine Corps, is you do not just learn what to do. You learn how to train other people how to do it. And so you could take one person like that, and if you give them 6 months with a group, that group is not going to be ready to take on Delta head to head. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. But a poorly managed group that even thinks they're well managed, take them out like boom, gone. I actually did a show one time where I talked about what I would do, how I would make sure you were dead. And I've actually thought about taking it down because I kind of feel like the idiots with the ferrets, I think they were ferrets that they infected with the H5N5.
Yes, they have a
and then they told other people how to do it. I'm like, I probably shouldn't be telling people how to do this shit.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of people that know. It's not like it's a secret.
Well, the advantage you've got, though, is that defending is so much easier than attacking. So when you make my PhD dissertation at Harvard was on underground nuclear defense shelters and field fortifications for NATO troops. So, yeah, it's not precise, but from so many battles that we studied in history, the defender has at least a 3-to-1 advantage over an attacker. And if you've got cleared lines of fires, guard posts, walls, you have like a 10-to-1 advantage. And look at, you know, the Civil War and the Battle of Fredericksburg and realize the power of even a 2-foot-tall wall when someone's coming at you out in the open. So when you're defending, it's an easier mission for you, and the odds of you succeeding are so much more better. It takes probably a force 10 times as large for them to overrun you. And overrun you means, yeah, they could kill you if they had 10 times your number, but for every person who dies in your group, even if it's all of you, more of the attackers die than you do. And Marauder groups are, you know, not Marine units. They're not Delta. They're people trying to stay alive in a collapse. And the last thing in the world they want to do is get a wound, because the wound's probably fatal in that situation. So Marauders are not going to attack unless they're confident they can not just steal your food, but they can also do it without getting killed. So if you've got really well-organized defenses and 50-plus people like we've got at Fortitude Ranch, you're going to make it. And this is kind of the training we do in the app, because you're exactly right. You'd spend, you know, the rest of your life covering misperceptions of how a collapse would do. So that's why we've got the Collapse Survivor app, because in these simulations, you know, flash mob, election war, H5N1, you go through it. So you get a question like, there's a Marauder group outside. They're going to be coming at you next. What do you want to do? This is to me the worst thing is, I'm going to have a starving lady come up with her starving child, and they're going to be begging for food. And that's a question that's come up in this Collapse Survivor App simulation. Will you give her food? And then when you play the app and you pick your answer, you could play it, Jack. Some of your friends could play it and get different outcomes because it's probabilistic. The app will randomly pick what happens. So in that one, in that scenario, as I recall it, there's like a 40% chance that the starving lady is part of a marauder group. She's a distraction. She's out there begging while they're sneaking in on the other side of your compound. 40% of the time, that's what happens. Like 30% of the time, if you go out to give the lady something, you get shot by the group. So there's just so many risks that people wouldn't think about. I'm not blaming people not to know that. I mean, it's a specialty. But you learn about that in the Collapse Survivor app, and that's the purpose of it, to help people get aware of the threats and then training on how you deal with it. And then we do food advice, too. You know, we tell people about, you know, Jerusalem artichoke. You know about Jerusalem artichoke. 98% of Americans have no clue what Jerusalem artichoke is. It's a fantastic survival food, so we educate that. You know, we have preparedness news item. We've done preparedness news items on Jerusalem artichoke. And this really pisses me off. Sorry to get off on another tangent, but if you try to buy Jerusalem artichoke, it's almost impossible. They don't sell any true seed.
It's for like $14 a pound.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's a fantastic.
Yeah.
What our government should be doing is our government should tell people, look, Americans, our future is an age of collapse. An H5N1 pandemic is going to come. It's not low risk like the CDC says. Bullshit. It's going to happen. It's going to be horrible. Russia could use nuclear weapons. North Korea could destroy electric grid. You need to be prepared. Every American should plant Jerusalem artichoke. I don't care if you're in New York City. If you've got a 3-foot parcel of earth where you're planting flowers, plant Jerusalem artichoke again. You do get a flower. It looks like a sunflower.
Yep.
But you need to, every person should be planting Jerusalem artichoke. All the suburbs and rural areas we've got, if we planted Jerusalem artichoke, it's beyond trillions. The trillions of calories you would get out of that could help make the difference between life and death for millions of people in a collapse. That's what our government should be doing. They should also stockpile food. We should have a civil defense program like we started to do during the Cold War but never really executed very well. We should be stockpiling food. We should be telling Americans, honestly, you're entering the age of collapse. Plant Jerusalem artichoke. Get educated on preparedness. Learn how to do things your grandparents knew how to do but you've forgotten to do. Learn how to garden. Learn how to have chickens. You know, even in some cities like Colorado Springs, you can have chickens in the city limits. Everyone should have chickens in their backyard.
Well, and everybody should be thinking about ways to feed their chickens or their backyard livestock. We talk about that a lot. Like, if you want to know the best meat source for people to raise for sustainability, personal sustainability, it's rabbits.
Yeah, we get that argument all the time. Is it rabbits or chickens?
I'll tell you why it's rabbits. It's rabbits because a doe and $2 will, or a two does and a buck will produce more meat for you than a boar or meat goat per year. But the beauty of if I'm going to try to feed chickens without the feed store, it can be done, but it's complicated. If I have a bagging lawnmower, I can feed rabbits. And so I have essentially a miniature ruminant in a rabbit. They're not really ruminants. Somebody's going to get all pissy. Like, I'm talking about from a management standpoint. If I have enough pasture, I can raise sheep or I can raise goats or I can raise cows and I don't have to go to the feed store to feed them. If I'm raising chickens, I can do things with, let's say, black soldier fly. I can grow certain components that, like, sorghum's really easy to grow. Black hole sunflower's really easy to grow. I could stockpile food for my chickens. But in the end, if I run out, it is very hard to keep a significant number of chickens alive without some form of external supply, especially for the person that's sitting on a half acre in suburbs somewhere, even out in a rural area.
This is a lot like the debate between, you know, an AR and a shotgun. You can get preppers on both sides.
Yeah.
We'll literally get into a fight arguing their side. Well, I'll give you a chicken example.
Why not both, right?
Both is always best. Fortitude Ranch in Nevada, for example, where we are there, chickens are better than rabbits. The reason is we don't have a lot of grass to raise rabbits, but we do have a lot of bugs, and our chickens could free range out there. So our chickens could free range and go get bugs, and we get, I don't want to turn people off, but we get Mormon cricket and other infestations of crickets during the year out there. So we get a lot of bugs a lot more so than grass. So chickens are better in Nevada, but that's high mountain desert. I think in most places, your rabbits would probably win that debate. But it's like the AR-15 versus 12-gauge shotgun, which is best to defend your home. I've had preppers on both sides, you know, chew me up, saying, no, it's mine, and the other say, no, it's this one. And it depends a lot on your situation.
Depends.
But this is what people need to get educated on, and 95% of Americans don't have a clue. I wouldn't even be thinking about either one of the options.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm sure you've heard two is one and one is none.
Yeah.
So we've built on that here. Three is for me, four is even more, and five keeps you alive. You should have options in all these areas. Yep. What's the best home defense weapon? The one you have access to, mm-hmm. right? And what are you home defending against? If I'm going to the door in the middle of the night and it's not crisis time and somebody's knocking on my door because they broke down the street, but I don't know that, I probably want a handgun because I can conceal it behind the door without freaking the problem. I'm not, what do you want? It's some old lady like, oh, broke down, right? If I've got multiple people trying to come into my home, I probably want high rate of fire. It all depends. It always depends. And so I'm a big believer in keeping those options open. My comment on the rabbit was just more from a standpoint of you have a meat source that you can rely upon long term that you can feed from most areas of the country. Really, if you have a lawn, you have rabbit food. And if you plant some willows and some poplars, you've got fodder. And now I can grow as many. I'm going to be the rabbit barbecue location during the zombie collapse, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a place for both. But I think that, I keep chickens. I keep chickens because I eat every day because of my chickens. And I very seldom kill a chicken because I eat eggs. So I think there's strengths on both sides. And that's the arguments you're talking about. I usually find them to come from people who are not that prepared for anything because they're looking for silver bullet solutions.
Yep.
Think about the fact you have 49 triggers in your presentation. There's no silver bullet for 49 triggers.
And I may not have the one that causes the collapse.
You may not. That's the other thing. We don't know what the hell the next thing is.
You know, we don't have alien invaders on there, but, you know, I can't 100% rule that out.
We don't have the simulation fails either, but we could all be in a simulation. Who knows?
Well, you don't have to worry.
Yeah. It just blinks off. But it could glitch instead of just blink off. If it blinks off, that's one thing. If it glitches, we get an architect reset. Like, seriously, though, there are people that when you talk like this, they say, well, if it fucking gets that bad, I'm done. I'm cashing in my I'm not worried about trying to survive. What do you tell a person that has that attitude?
Well, we do hear that quite a lot, and more so amongst the elderly. I mean, the young are the ones who really need to be prepping the most, and unfortunately they're not. I think the age group's underrepresented. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be a lot of opportunities, obviously. You know, if you have career ambitions, I mean, after a collapse, if you're alive, holy cow, the rebuilding is going to be a fantastic opportunity for you. I do think you can survive. If you've got preparations, you can survive. I mean, 40 Ranch, we think we're built to survive just about anything. Yeah, you could come up with, believe it or not, the asteroid or supervolcano are really the worst threats because if you block the atmosphere, you know, we stockpile food and stuff so we can go a year, but we really need to grow. We need to garden, and the livestock is our long-term survival. Well, if the sun's blocked out, it's pretty much game over. We do have contingency plans I won't get into for that, but there's going to be opportunity to survive. You can survive, and when it's done, I mean, let's rebuild the country right. You know, let's learn from our lessons. Let's get the Constitution back and actually follow it this time, not allow the Ninth and Tenth Amendments to be ignored. Let's do term limits. You know, we could make a lot better country, a lot better world than we've got now. So that's the upside. Plus, you know, you've got family you want to protect. You want them to survive, don't you? So everyone really should have a goal of trying to survive. And it's doable. It really is doable. It'd be nice if our government would help out instead of being the biggest barrier to prepping and the biggest liar when it comes to threats. But, you know, maybe that could change. Or maybe that protects it and hope the Texit does it right.
I think Texit is more likely than the current government changing for the better for the people. And I don't care. I don't care who gets elected. I think you can have worse when you pick between two politicians around the country. But remember, we're also electing, you know, at any given election, 30 odd senators and 500 freaking House reps and the people that really do the most in our country are not elected. They're selected. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even talking about the erroneous concept of an election. I'm talking about bureaucrats who are appointed. They have more power in many ways on a day-to-day basis than any elected official. You know, the people that set policy inside the EPA, for instance. You say, well, the EPA can't be the cause of collapse. Yeah, but they can make your ability to be ready for a collapse or the eventuality of a collapse more likely by inhibiting the ability for us to actually build housing that's resilient and redundant, right, in a way that people can afford. Because one of our biggest impediments to building that type of housing right now is the Environmental Protection Agency. It's also like people don't realize how distributed these threats or these, let's say aggravating factors is maybe a better word than threat, these aggravating factors to our ability to be prepared are. So this is something that's flown under the radar for so many people. In much of the country, it is now impossible to build just a new stick-built, typical builder grade, 1,400 square foot, three-bedroom house. Why? Because the counties have gotten greedy, and they put minimum square footage on new builds in to protect the tax base, which is a nice way of saying, I want to make sure my grandchildren can ever buy a house. That's what that really means. So this makes then the small houses are available. Everybody's competing for them when they do go up for sale. But somebody's got to die or move for that house to go for sale. So how do we create the inventory we need for housing that actually takes care of our population? And let's go ahead and import 20 million people with no control whatsoever and let them into our country. Oh, that'll all work out just fine. And then when you start looking at something like civil violence and civil collapse and civil war and when people are miserable, they are more likely to do bad shit. I mean, this is again, go look at every time society broke down in any time in history. People were miserable right before it happened, because when people are happy, they tend to defend what they have. And when they're miserable, they'll seek change and they'll go fryer pan to fryer and not realize that they've screwed up. Like, you've been around a while, like even longer than me, I'm thinking, just by reading your CV there or anything, not about how you look. But I remember very well Iran and the Iran hostage affair under Jimmy Carter. And I remember the Iranian Revolution. I was really young, but I remember it happening. And so it was interesting enough to look into. And those students who revolted in Iran, they did not think they were going to get what they did after that revolution, right? They thought they were getting rid of the Shah and they were going to have self-governance. And they ended up with a theocracy, and a brutal theocracy. So people will make bad decisions for themselves when they're miserable. And tell me we're not just in a state of perpetual misery that's only getting worse right now.
Well, we're a divided country, certainly. And, you know, we saw polls in the Collapse Survivor app saying that, but you can see that everywhere. You know, when Ray Dalio says it's greater than a 50% chance of civil war after the election, you can't ignore that. And that's the place we're in. So I just don't see, you know, if Harris wins, she's not going to get the Trump supporters to support her. If Trump wins, he's not going to get the Harris supporters to support him. So we're divided. And so whether it's the U.S. breaks down into civil war and that leads to a collapse, or I think it's more likely the alliance against us, China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, takes advantage of that. I think that's more likely. But regardless, we're headed towards a collapse anyway. And if we survive all that, eventually a pandemic's going to get us, or someone's going to take down our grid. There's just so many ways that I don't see a way out of it. I really don't. I'm sorry to be so pessimistic. I do have an uplifting point of view. I think the global warming problem's going to be solved.
Let's have you end there and we'll do some questions. Because this is, I will tell you this, that we get this dark sometimes. This is darker than we usually are. We're more of a lifestyle design inspirational show. So let's give some people an upside here.
Yeah, if you go 36, that's my good news.
Okay.
That's my one good news slide in that whole briefing we gave on our probability of collapse model. Good news, the global warming problem is going to be alleviated, because when you kill off billions of people and when there's a collapse that stops economic production for a couple years, there's almost no pollution. There's no global warming. So at least we're going to solve the global warming problem. That's the good news.
We're going to solve the one problem that I don't even think is a freaking problem then. Yay us. Yeah. I think that actually global warming's biggest threat is what people will use it to do, mm-hmm. And to get done and to sell it people. Let's take a few questions and then we'll let you go here.
Sure.
The app you kept mentioning, how much does the app cost?
It's about $10. It's 30 days free and then $10 a year. We have to, we have to maintain it. It takes some cost to keep going, but we're not making money on the app, but it pays for the people who run the app so we can put out threat alerts.
If you sell something on the App Store for $1 a month, you make about 75 cents in net income off of it.
Yeah, they take 30% off the top.
Yeah. Okay, so 70 cents. I thought it was 25. All right. Hogg says, do you see this in a few states or the whole country? I'm going to guess you'll use one of my famous answers of it depends.
What was the question?
Do you see this in a few states or the whole country? And I think he's talking more civil breakdown.
It depends on who wins. Again, if the Democrats wins, it's the conservative states are going to be revolting and moving out. If Trump wins, it's going to be Democratic-controlled states, California, Nevada, Colorado, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts, for example, where the rural counties are going to feel emboldened. And so as the state-controlled urban area pushes back against the Trump administration, they're going to say, F you, we're going conservative. We're going to basically revolt against the state government. I think you're not going to see civil war fighting between states. You're going to see civil war fighting as states break up.
So if, like maybe a country like Ukraine leaves the Soviet Union and a few years later, a piece of it wants to go back and the other piece doesn't. And because that never happened or anything, that's just crazy talk. Madeline says, why will the app give you warnings before the government alerts?
A lot of reasons for that. The CDC. I mean, the CDC lying to you. The government wants you to trust government, listen to government, reelect government, and do what they say. So they want you to be calm and think you're taken care of. We don't have that problem with the Collapse Survivor app. When we see that there's a 10% chance of a solar flare that could take down the electric grid, we're going to warn people. Now, we're not going to say the sky is falling, the grid will be down tomorrow, guaranteed. We put out an alert saying there's a 10% chance, according to one expert, it's highly uncertain. But, for example, you may not want to be in a position where you're up flying in an airliner or something if the grid goes down, because that creates a lot of trouble. It's smart preparedness. But the government also is, they don't want you to be more prepared. They want you to just trust in them and do what they tell you to do. So you'll get advice here that may tell you to not do what the government's telling you to do, and that's why you need it. But the government's motivations is not prioritizing survival of citizens. It's protecting government. I didn't get to continuity of government, but sometime if you want to come back on the show.
Yeah,
continuity of government is another huge problem. The Americans don't know this. The official government policy is the number one priority in a collapse or disaster is not taking care of Jack, not taking care of any of you. It's taking care of themselves. It's official policy. They call it continuity of government. It's essential that all the senior elected officials be kept alive so they can make decisions.
Yeah.
That's their top goal, which means extra police, extra military now gets assigned to protect the top elected officials, which means there's less police available to protect you.
Well, the other side of this is if you want to know if you can trust your government, remember back in the early days of COVID-AIDS and we had those real-time death counters on every channel, and it's all been memory hold now. It's hard to even find a video of a broadcast that shows them. Where do you think that thing came from? Do you think it came from ABC, NBC, or CNN? Or do you think the government said, here you guys go? And let me tell you this, there was absolutely no way that thing had any accuracy or connected to anything. It was just like somebody just made a scrolling thing that was based on absolute bullshit. There's who you're trusting if you trust them to tell you when you need to be worried.
Yeah.
Right? They are very prepared. They are very prepared. This is what people think. The government's not prepared at all. No, the government's very prepared, just like you said, to protect themselves. The state is an organism, and an organism's first instinct is self-preservation.
Yeah, I get this question a lot at Fort Ranch members. Say, Drew, what are you going to do when the government shows up with some National Guard forces saying, we're taking your food? This comes up a lot. And a lot of people point to some official executive orders saying that in a collapse, the government is authorized to steal from citizens. And our answer is, First of all, I kind of deny it. I don't think that's likely to happen. It's going to be so much chaos, and the government really does have stuff to take care of themselves. It's not just Mount Weather and Raven Rock. At state levels, even some cities, there are facilities and means to take care of themselves. But if they do come out and do this, I also don't think you're going to have the National Guard backing you. The National Guard is full of locals, and the National Guard is not going to go out and steal, which in effect means kill people by taking their food in a collapse. The National Guard, I don't think, would support that. So I do think it's highly unlikely. But if I'm pressured to answer the question, my answer is I don't care if it is a government group, if they've got an official's court-approved order to steal my food, and they've got some troops with them. At that point, our goal at Ford Ranch is we will keep our members alive. That's our contract. That's our promise. And the members include us, staff. We're there with you. So we will treat that. We'll tell them, no, we're not going to do it. We will fight you. We will shoot you. We will fight to the last person not to give you our food. And if we do give them our food, if it's that bad that they're coming to steal our food and we give it away, we're going to die anyway. I'd rather die defending my food than of starvation after I've given it away.
I've heard a very similar objection to something as simple as a garden to this since I've started, which is, well, if I have a garden, then the zombies are going to steal my tomatoes. And understand, in the prepper community, a lot of times zombie does not actually mean zombie. It's the concept is, if you're prepared for zombies, you're prepared for anything. Zombies are hostile, right? So my response is, I'd rather have a garden to defend than not.
Yeah.
I'd rather have reserve to defend than not.
Absolutely.
Right. At least I have something to defend. At least I have something to sustain me while I'm defending myself and others,
But the key word is defend. And that's what amazes me about the NRA. I'm on another topic. But how come the NRA never brings up the fact that if you want to defend AR-15s, the answer is you need them for a collapse. It's not just to defend against, an illegal government. It's to defend against marauders and a collapse. And I've written, emailed many times for years to the NRA saying, why aren't you pointing out that a justification for, quote, military capable weapons, unquote, is we face marauder threats in a collapse, and it's going to happen, and we need an AR for that. And they've never done it. I can't understand.
No, and it's happened everywhere there's ever been one. It's happened everywhere there's ever been one. There has always been people that will go out and live like locusts off the other people that they can take from. And I do not consider the NRA to be a friend anymore. And I'm a life member because, once you are, you are. But I won't give them another dime. I don't feel like they're actually serving the purpose that they were formed to serve at all at this point. Moving on, though, let's go ahead and answer Broke Dad's question. These percentages seem low. Does this mean the chances our life goes on as normal, or should we be looking at something else that will disrupt normal life?
I'm glad he asked that, because the 16 to 50%, 16% is low, the 50% is high. It's a range. So 57% is the high estimate of what the likelihood, the chance of a collapse, over the coming year. That's not low. That's high. So there is a high chance of an annual chance of a collapse. And again, it gets worse over time. Every year that AI continues and gets more capable, our odds of surviving just go down. And it could go down. If AI takes off geometrically like that, it could be we've only got five more years and then there's nothing we can do. There's no way to defend.
So the AI thing, I'm actually big on using AI, and I think people should be using AI for the same reason I think you should have an AR, because you should have the same pew-pew that the people that might want to kill you have, right? You should have access. And it also gives you a better understanding of what can be done, because this is what people do not understand about AI. ChatGPT is not what concerns me. We're already running our own individual AI models. And if I want to build an AI model for something benign, let's say herpetology, right? I get a bunch of herpetologists together. It takes a lot less work and effort to train that AI LLM on herpetology than it does to create a ChatGPT. We can do it for in a fraction of the time and cost because we're being specialized. Well, that means that some people could build one that is completely dedicated to biological warfare. That means that people could build one and run it on basically a couple gaming computers put together that's built to determine how to do a lot of the things that you're talking about. So we can actually build AI models already. And I mean, people are doing this in their bedrooms that are dedicated to a single subject or single area. And they are actually much better and much faster and much more reliable on what they have. I've got a guy in my audience, and I have him on for interviews sometimes. They've built an AI tool for natural farming. And so my point is that the threat of AI is less the AI and more that it is now a tool that other people will use, and there are people that will use it for very bad things.
Absolutely. Well, so AI is being used to develop, you know, new vaccines, new drugs, new viruses as well, because you can use a virus to do good things, not just bad things. But the problem is that AI technology and the information and the knowledge that it builds up, you know, sooner or later it's going to be used deliberately by someone, some group, some bad person to develop a deadly human virus that's been released. Or there could be an accident. You know, when you've got these labs, especially ones like AI, where they're not doing it at a Fort Detrick, you know, the Army former Chem Bio, it's not Fort Detrick. It's not a, you know, level 4 facility where if you have an accident, you know, it's not bad. If someone's doing it in their garage, and here's something else you need to verify. Don't take my word of this. DIY Bio, do-it-yourself bio. If you go to DIYBio.com, look it up. That's actually a group of people on their own playing with biotechnology and doing stuff in their basements in their garage. Could be your neighbor, Jack, is doing it. And so they may have good intentions, but they might accidentally develop a human-human transmissible H5N1 or a brand new virus. And so with AI, with more capable, more success of doing good stuff, it's also more capable of accidentally or deliberately doing really huge scale bad stuff. I don't think AI is good. I think AI should have been outlawed, but it's too late. And the problem is we couldn't.
See, here's my problem with that. Outlawed.
If we outlawed it here, we'd outlaw
it. Wouldn't matter.
Yeah, North Korea would keep doing it. Yeah, I know.
It wouldn't matter. We outlawed alcohol for 10 years, too, and there were people drinking more than they ever did. We wouldn't even have the alcohol problem we have today if we didn't have prohibition, because everybody was drinking beer and wine, and mostly wine, prior to prohibition. Spirits became a thing in America when, same reason they made marijuana with like 30% THC. Smaller amount, higher potency, easier to transport, easier to get away with. Right. So if we outlawed it, all that would happen is everybody that would
go elsewhere too. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We can't do it. As I said, that's why I said I don't see any alternative. There's no way we're going to avoid the age of collapse.
Yeah.
Just the hope is you can survive it if you get prepared.
Bad Hog asks if the presentation deck will be available after the show. Right here I have Colonel Miller's YouTube up. And this right here, the first video under the video screen is, that's from your press camp.
That's it.
Conference.
Yeah, that shows you all this. And if someone wants to email me again, manager@fortyranch.com, I'd be glad to send you a PDF of the slide deck. It'd be great if more people could spread the word about the age of collapse, the need to prepare, because the government will continue the lie of it's okay, low risk, up until the collapse has started. Then you'll get your warning after.
Yeah, you'll get your warning after it's already too late. Yeah. If you're okay with it, I have that PDF. I can upload it to my server, and I can put it in the show notes.
That'd be fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, so there will be a link to all of Colonel Miller's sites, all their social media that he sent me, the YouTube channel, the specific video, where to get the app, all of it in the audio notes that will be published about 30 minutes after we're done live here. If you're watching us live, there's a link in the notes now. If you click it while we're still live, there won't be anything there because we're not done yet. But we will be soon. Next up, that was the same question. If the H1N1 is that dangerous, then why are they not making a vaccine for it? And I think you actually said H5N5, but it doesn't really matter.
H5N1. They probably are. And that's the justification for gain of function research. You develop a more deadly virus, then you try to develop a vaccine for it. The problem is the viruses vary so much. It's like the flu vaccine. You know, we develop a flu vaccine and, you know, we've got, I think it's less than a 50% chance it'll actually work. So they could be doing it. And if North Korea, if Russia is developing a human-human transmissible version of H5N1, I think they will develop a vaccine for it before they release it. And then they'll give it to people they want to give it to. But
even if
really
it's not working 100%, it's better than, you know, if you're going to do this, you're better off with some protection and keeping it to your own people.
Yeah, but again, the viruses mutate all the time. So the second you develop a vaccine, you know, within the next day, the virus may have mutated such to where your vaccine may or may not work.
This is the problem. People read and hear things and they assume things that aren't true. So when they hear like an H5N1 or an H5N3 or an H2N1, whatever, they think that means that's that flu and that's just that. And that's the only, as long as it's that, you can make a vaccine for that particular thing. That's called a clade. But within clades, there's various mutations.
Right.
So just because you made an H5N1 vaccine doesn't mean it will work on all H5N1 flus. Correct. It means it will make for the particular subclass of clade that you made that vaccine for. And people say the flu vaccine doesn't work. It's actually really effective for the one it's made for. But that virus just mutates so quickly. And that's why doing it for COVID was going to be impossible, because it mutates even faster. And so there's a point where people either survive or don't and build up natural innate immunity. And I don't think they can make a vaccine that will be predictably effective. But I don't think it matters if the people doing it believe that they can. Right.
Then they'll keep applying for funding for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you said, somebody just screwing up. Broke Dad says, how likely can a solar-powered system survive an EMP? That has a lot to do with a lot of things, but I'll let you take a stab at it.
Yeah, real fast. If you have a solar system, don't have it connected. So your solar panels, everything I read tells me solar panels themselves will be okay. EMP is unlikely. You know, again, it can't be 100% sure. They'll pause. The problem is you got the long wire running from your solar system into the house where your inverter and batteries are. That's what's going to collect the signal. So, for example, Ford Ranch, Texas, we've got two solar systems. On one of them, the panels are up, but they're not connected. The inverter and the batteries, nothing connected. It's kind of shielded. On our other one, the inverter is connected to the batteries, but it's only in the house, and there's nothing going outside, so we can't pick up the signal. So the best thing is don't connect your system. There is an EMP shield product. Some people swear by it, but the honest answer is you can't be 100% sure it will work. If you go to EMP Shield, they sell systems for solar systems, but you can't be 100% sure it will work because there's just too many uncertainties when an EMP event occurs, the signal you'll get, so many different things.
All right. New old man says, in a collapse, what targets do you recommend to loot? Join the roving gangs of marauders. So I think he's being tongue-in-cheek, because I know this dude. And he's basically saying, what's going to get hit first?
I think marauders will go out of easy targets first. That'd be the smart thing to do. If you wait too long to leave, you know, New York City example, if you wait too long to leave, marauders will be going after people, you know, on foot or in cars fleeing the city. Eventually, after law and order is broken down for several days, you are going to have to worry about being hit when you're trying to bug out, which is why we say, get the Collapse Survivor app, get the threat alerts. And by the way, when I say get the threat alerts, this app will push through the alert to your phone. So if you're doing something else, it doesn't wait for you to open the app and look at it. You'll get an alert. Only on the threat alert. If you're playing a weekly simulation on it, if it's a preparedness news item like Jerusalem artichoke education, that you can make an alert if you want or turn it off. But it will push you an alert. So when we see, for example, that H5N1 is spreading in the United Kingdom, we will immediately issue an alert saying H5N1 is coming. I don't care if you think it's in the U.S. now or not. Assume it's here. Get ready for a collapse, a pandemic and a collapse. If you're a 14 Ranch member, get to your 14 Ranch location now. Do not go to grocery stores. Stay away from the public. So that's why you want to do this.
In a collapse, that's the one I just read. Okay, this is an interesting question. I guess this goes to one I was talking about. The consultant that's a friend of mine being asked by billionaires how to control people that they would let into their facility prior to, you know, the full breakdown. What prevents Fortitude Ranch from enslaving their members after the collapse?
Because staff like myself in the uniform, we're a small minority. We're largely members there. And the members who are coming in, most of them don't know each other. They know the staff. But we need all our members. We need everyone doing gardening work, taking care of the animals, gathering firewood, manning our medical clinics, and everyone has to serve guard duty. We got 6 guard posts. Even if you got 100 people, you're going to be on guard duty at least every other day for, you know, a 4-hour shift. It's a lot of work. We need everyone. And when a marauder group is spying on us, I want them to see as many armed people as possible. So no one could take over, because how would you convince, you know, largely 90% other strangers of yours to join you to take it over. And it just doesn't make sense. We're a survival community. We depend on having everyone participating. And we all want to stay alive. We're the good guys inside. We assume everyone outside our wall is a potential bad guy. And if that's a government official with National Guard troops coming up to take our food, they're bad guys too at that point.
All right. I wanted to, I'll take the last one because plants are my thing. Hella Pagan says, is he talking about purple wild artichokes that are giant thistles? And the answer is absolutely not. He's talking about Jerusalem artichoke, also known as sunchoke, and it is in the Helianthus family, which is the sunflower family, and they grow a root tuber. And they are a great carbohydrate source. I don't recommend living on them now, but in a survival situation, they would be extensively valuable to have. And one of the things that can happen in, like, warfare scenarios is, like, the burning of the fields. And when you have a tuber, what you actually eat is below ground, and it would take pretty much a friggin' a mortar or more to actually damage anything that's below ground. They grow like weeds. They do take a little bit of management. People say you can't get rid of them once you put them in. If you leave them alone for a while, they'll actually kill themselves. You actually do have to do some harvesting and things like that to maintain them. But they are very easy to grow, very easy to maintain. First year I grew them, somebody in my audience sent me like four of them, and I cut them into like four pieces each, and I planted them in a 10 by 10 bed or a 10 by to 3 by 10 bed. And I ended up with 5 5-gallon buckets of tubers at the end of that season. I actually can't think of something more productive per square foot for the low amount of labor input. Like the most productive plant in the world by square foot is an aquatic plant. You probably had them at Chinese restaurants. Hopefully not the Peking Moon where they serve the cat every day at noon. The water chestnut is the most productive plant by square foot, but there is a specialty nature to maintaining it, and they're not that easy to process. Jerusalem artichoke pretty much can be cut up, cooked, and eaten, and you can eat them raw too. They also do have a reputation for causing flatulence, which they do. But I always recommend that people learn about fermented foods as well. And if you ferment them in a lacto-fermentation, that will go away. And if you cook them long enough into more like a porridge, which, again, I don't want to eat on a day-to-day. I live on meat day-to-day. But in a survival situation, I live on what there is. If you cook them long enough into like a porridge, that also stops as well and stops that distress. Anyway, you got anything else before you go? You want to tell people? I mean, you've mentioned your sites a few times. I will make sure there's links to everything in the audio notes, but just, you know, about how they can learn more. And you mentioned Fortitude Ranch, and I wanted to show people real quick. It sounds like a place, but it's actually a group of locations, right?
Right. Like, yeah, we have seven now, and we're growing via franchising now. If anyone knows or operates a remote RV park, that's a great place to put a Fortitude Ranch facility. You've already invested in land. We have RV memberships. You got bathrooms. A lot of them will have a, you know, kitchen or a cafe. We would like to cover a lot more than we've got. We're looking at locations. We need them in Arizona. We need them in the Ozarks. We need a lot more. And the other thing about Fortitude Ranch is it's a community, not just locally, but nationally. So if you're a Fortitude Ranch Texas member, Jack, you're near Fortitude Ranch, you joined Fortitude Ranch Texas, but you're up in Maine hunting when the shit hits the fan and you can't get back to Texas, well, go to Fortitude Ranch, New York. Eventually, we'll hopefully have a franchise in New Hampshire. You can go to the closest one. They've got your challenge password. They'll verify you're a member, and you won't have your room that has all your food and your whiskey and stuff that's stashed at Fortitude Ranch, Texas, but they'll keep you alive at Fortitude Ranch, New York. So that's the other idea. You can go anywhere to vacation, and you can go anywhere to survive in a collapse. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, I wanted to real quick in there ask you about something before I let you go. And that is, my first rule of preparedness is everything that you do to prepare for disaster and collapse tomorrow should also make your life a little bit better today. It should be if times get tougher, even if they don't. So I noticed the term recreational there. So a lot of these retreats and facilities seem like, well, if the world ends, you got something. But if the world don't end, they just sit there with your stuff and your money. It sounds like there is some level of value to being a member of one of these facilities, even if the shit doesn't hit the fan.
Exactly right. So you can come. Yeah, every member gets up to 2 weeks per year to stay at any Ford Ranch location absolutely free. So we have guest rooms for visiting members. And so, like, if you go to Ford Ranch, West Virginia, you're surrounded by the George Washington National Forest. It's fantastic. You can go canoeing on the Potomac, horseback riding. All these places are nearby. They're good recreational facilities. Ford Ranch, Wisconsin is a former RV resort on a lake. So don't recommend it, you know, in January, February, unless you want to do cold hunting. But if you want to go up there in the summer to Ford Ranch, Wisconsin, and stay for free at a lakefront resort, you can do that. So absolutely. We're trying to make it, again, affordable for the middle class. So I realize most middle class folks don't have $10,000 sitting around to join Ford Ranch. That's up front. It's lower after that. But, you know, that also covers your vacation, you know, for future years as long as your membership. So if you tried to rent a log home to visit in the Colorado Mountains in July, you're going to spend more on that rental than you will on your Ford Ranch membership. So stay at a log home at Ford Ranch, Colorado for free.
So in some ways it's like a timeshare?
Not a timeshare. Timeshare is, again, what's the biggest problem with prepping government? You say timeshare, and I'm into a whole host of regulations, and you don't own anything. It's like a country club.
That's
when you
I'm
join
at.
A country club, you pay an upfront fee, you're a member, you get services. You don't own the country club. You don't own part of the country club. So it's not a timeshare. There's no ownership. There's no real estate ownership or anything like it. It's a country club membership model.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, hey, I appreciate talking to you today, and I will definitely have you back on to talk about some other things. I really like to dig into it, and we just no way we can. We're long for even my show today.
Oh, sorry.
But I would like to talk. No, you're fine. If it wasn't good, you wouldn't be here. but I would like to talk about continuity of government, because the word deep state gets thrown around a lot, and when people tell me the deep state is a conspiracy, then you don't understand continuity of government. Because continuity of government is the undertow that makes sure that everything keeps moving, and it operates all the time, not just during one of these collapse models.
Right.
Anyway, Drew, thank you so much for joining us
today. Thank you, Jack.
Again, I'm going to make sure all of his stuff is in the audio notes for episode 3575. Go to the Survival Podcast to find it if you're in the video right now. As long as it ain't live, click that link to jump right over there and get them. Drew, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, real quick as we wrap up today, I want to remind you real quick that one of the ways you can help support the work that we do here at the Survival Podcast is to join the Member Support Brigade. If you join the Member Support Brigade, you can help us out by basically paying about 18 cents an episode for the show. That's what it really comes out to. It is the primary way that we pay our bills around here, and you'll get discounts to over 70 different vendors in the areas that we talk about. Tactical to practical, guns to gardens, and everything in between. You can learn more. Just go to survivalpodcast.com and click on members to sign up there, and you can learn more about the program and all the places that you can get discounts from. Also, you can do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. I don't have an item of the day for you today, but if you're going to buy something online today, tomorrow, next week, if you go there first, as long as you start your shopping there, you use one of our associated vendors, you will help us out. We'll get some small commission off what you were going to buy. Anyway, with that, I'll wrap up since we were long today. I want to let you guys know tomorrow will be, as usual, an expert council Q&A show for the week. We'll hear from about six different members of the expert council on various questions that you guys have sent in. I do have a pretty good backlog of content for them right now, but it's starting to run down again. I could use some questions for the expert council. TSPC expert in the subject line, send an email to jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. Formula to be most likely to get a good answer. My question is for expert council member, person's name. My question is one sentence, question mark, hit the return key, give me the details. That way we're clear on what the question is, and so are you. But we'll have that expert council show for you on Thursday tomorrow, and then Friday flashback. And we are in regular scheduled programming, except they have a big announcement for Tuesday next week. About 4 years ago, I guess, I put together a group of podcasters in the Liberty and Prepper homesteading world, and we called it Unloose the Goose, because you don't mess with the goose, right? Don't tread on me. The goose, leave me alone, right? And we are going to do a reunion of that kind of super podcaster group, at least core members of it. CJ Kilmer, Nicole Sauce, Myself and John Bush will be on for an Unloose the Goose reunion, and that will go out on the Old Goose channel as well, but it'll also be our episode for the week. And then I got a couple more things, even though this was a long episode. One, I heard from somebody who bought a ticket to the workshop in November that now can't come. And when I'm this close, it's up to them to sell their ticket, but I try to help them because I've already built the event to the total number of attendees. But if you are interested in coming to November workshop and you didn't get in because we sold out in 4 minutes, email me, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSP workshop, and I'll connect you with him. Whoever gets to me first gets connected first. And that could have already happened because I don't know. I've been on the air now for 2 hours. But I'll put it out there that that's there. Anyway, guys, take care. I'll catch you tomorrow with that expert council episode.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month.